call the meeting to order. Representative Detmer, have you read the minutes of March 19th?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I approve.
All right, Representative Detmer moves that the minutes of March 19th be approved. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes of 19th are approved. And now we're going to, as you know, mark up the bill that we talked about in committee last week. And first, I will move the A08-1469 amendment and move that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division. Any discussion on just adopting it so we get it before us? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So A08-1469 is now before us. And I do first have an author's amendment, and then we have a spreadsheet with a few changes in it to reflect the changes that are in the author's amendment. And so I'll briefly explain the amendment. We'll have Mr. Crow go through the spreadsheet with the changes from last Wednesday, and then we'll discuss the amendment. But first of all, the author's amendment that I'm offering puts back in something that we had in our bill last year, which is the FIED standard that was Representative Ward's bill, supported by the American Heart Association. It also clarifies what the QCOMP date is. We had talked about it in some places, and then it had another date in the bill, and this is to conform it to closing off that opportunity as of last week. And then we have some special ed repealer and rulemaking language that is Representative Faust's bill that he had that reflects what Representative Hillstrom's bill was doing. I can't remember exactly who had what in their bills, but this is just to use the expedited rulemaking process for the rules that the department needed to conform with the federal government so that we didn't lose any funding. And then the rest of what they were doing is transferred over into the task force on special education. Oh, and then also I have an oral amendment to this amendment. On page 6, line 10.
Madam Chair, is this the A27?
Representative Erickson, yes it is.
Thank you.
The A27 amendment. I haven't yet moved it, so I guess I do need to move it.
I would like to know what we're looking for.
Oh, I'm sorry. I will move it so that you'll know what you're looking at and so I can make this oral amendment.
Thank you.
So I'll move the H2475 A27 amendment. Thank you, Representative Erickson. I was about to make an oral amendment to an amendment I hadn't yet moved. So now I can make the oral amendment, and it is line 610 on page 6, line 10. The second large number there, instead of 23,190,000, it would be 23,262,000. So changing 190 to 262. And this relates to the conforming of the date for the QCOMP. So I will just incorporate that oral amendment. And then before we discuss this amendment or vote on it, Mr. Crow will go through the spreadsheet changes.
Madam Chair and members, there are three changes from the spreadsheet you saw last week that are incorporated in the spreadsheet based on this amendment. If you would look at your spreadsheet, legal size, landscape-oriented piece of paper, on line 5, you look under House Recommendations 2009, which is the ninth column from the right. It's right behind your bill in your packet.
Oh, this one.
You can see the savings from the alternative compensation fiscal 2009 limit are negative $20,514,000. This is about $4 million less than what was on the spreadsheet on Wednesday. Subsequent to the February forecast, some additional schools have applied, and rather than cutting them off, the date that's in the bill, March 20th, reflects allowing those schools to go ahead with their application, and there's an impact in 2009 and 2010 for that change. So, and then on line 10 and 34, you can see in line 34, $7,000 is added to the department appropriation for FIED rulemaking. That $7,000 is offset on line 10 in some money that wasn't being used for flood relief. So there's an additional $7,000 reduction in that line than there was on last Wednesday. On the back page, on line 51, if you remember, the target on Wednesday was around $18.5 million. This reflects the new target that will be adopted, I think, today or tomorrow, of $22,869,000 in the current biennium as part of the budget resolution. And then the tails target is $2,336,000. This amendment puts 2475, delete everything amendment, into the shape that would spend that entire amount.
Okay, any questions on the amendment or the spreadsheet? Representative Morgan.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment, the A27 amendment, is what's before us, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Madam Chair, does this amendment, I see in here we're talking about the half credit of physical education requirement and so forth. What impact does this amendment have on the state's budget and local school district's budget? Can Mr. Crow perhaps give us a quick...
Madam Chair, the $7,000 that's appropriated to the Department for Rulemaking is the impact on the state budget. That $7,000 is offset with a reduction of $7,000, so there's no net general fund impact to making the change. And there's no local note requested or performed, so I don't have an answer for you on school district budget impact.
Representative Morgan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I guess I can't help but feel that if we are going to require school districts to do something they're not currently doing, there has to be a cost to that. I don't know. I guess I'm perhaps not prepared to make a decision on this, but I don't know. I'm concerned about that. That's my comment right now.
All right. Thank you. Any other? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Madam Chairman. And again, it's not that districts aren't doing the physical education component that we're talking about here. It's just that now we have some standards, some state standards that we can abide by the school districts. We have national standards, but Minnesota is one of the few states that does not have standards, state standards. And we did drop the health education component. Let's drop it down to 1/2 credit. So we're looking at state standards now.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe Representative Demmer can help me. This won't mean additional costs then to school districts. I know I defer to your greater knowledge of physical education instruction at schools.
Representative Detmer, we'll all defer to your knowledge on
this. Madam Chairman and Representative, I would say, you know, I can speak for my three districts, no, it wouldn't have any additional cost. It's just that now the teachers will have some standards that will, you know, pick and follow. And I think we all can agree that there is a problem of obesity with our youth today. And I think if we can put down standards for our math and sciences and so forth that are increasing the test scores on our students in those areas, I think we can do the same thing for the health and fitness of our students. Healthy body, healthy mind.
Thank you very much. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we've had this discussion many times before, and the problem is when we do this, with the length of the school day, Representative Detmer, if you're going to add an extra half credit for SIAD, you're probably taking out an industrial arts, and you're probably taking out band and choir. You're probably taking out any of the electives. Right now, a lot of the schools are falling back to a six-hour day. And because of that, there aren't any electives for students to take anymore. And right now, all local school districts are required to have their own FIAD standards. And I think we're much better off having that. This is just another mandate for all the school districts, as Representative Morrow is going to.
Did you have your hand up, Representative Morrow?
No,
okay. Any other discussion?
Yeah, and just to reply to that, I guess I can, you know, the districts, I know the teachers, the physical education, health education teachers, you know, would like to see a standard that they can follow. So this is a response to that.
Representative Mantell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, one of the historical advantages and sometimes disadvantage to a nice Easter holiday break here is we get a concerted, fairly lengthy time to listen to people. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I heard more from school people than I heard from any other slice of the population in the three counties that I represent. And I can just tell the committee that I can predict with great certainty that whether it be the superintendent or the building principal or the FIAD teacher and even parents, they're going to conclude that this is a mandate, is a requirement that can't be met without a cost, and that can't be met without taking something from someplace else in order to do this. And this is a beautiful priority. And I think you know from our backgrounds that I've been very involved in physical education, granted in another era, but so for that reason, I worry about this.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you address Section 8, please, the local school district wellness policies, website, and the report that must be transmitted to the department?
Representative Erickson, this is, again, part of Representative Ward's bill from last year. And so we just put it in as it was when we discussed it last year, so I'm going to rack my memory to try to remember, other than what it actually says, what it means. Consistent with federal law requiring local school wellness policies, each school district annually must transmit its locally approved school wellness policy to the department in the form and manner the department determines. And then these all must be posted. So to me, this would mean that whatever their policy is, it needs to be public, and everyone, they need to report it into the department and then post it so that others can see what it is. Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair and committee, I would think just letting the locals do this on their own. They know how important wellness is. They have the federal law to follow. I don't know if they need another report going to the department, and then the department also having to post this, when really I think this is within the purview of local control. Those are my comments.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other discussion on this amendment? All right.
Madam Chair, I'm going to call for a roll call, please.
Very good. Roll call has been requested, and if there's no further discussion, we will, the clerk will call the roll.
Grayling?
Yes.
Enzo?
No.
Benson? Brown? Daphne?
Yes.
Demmer? Detmer?
Yes.
Dietrich?
Yes.
Dominguez?
Yes.
Erickson?
No.
Faust?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Heidrichen?
No.
Hilstrom?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
Markwart?
Yes.
McFarland?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Morrow?
Yes.
Murphy? Olson?
Pass.
Ware? Bausch?
No.
Olson?
No.
Demmer?
Yeah.
Swales?
These freshmen.
Benson?
No.
No pressure, Mark.
I crossed it. Yeah, it's going to be the rest of it. So.
The amendment fails on a, I've got, what have you got there? 10 ayes and 11 noes. And so the amendment 827 fails. And members, when we discussed, I was under the impression someone was going to move to take the fired one out. So I really do want the rest of the amendment. So we will be coming back to it a little bit later. For the
Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney.
I have the language that would remove the FIAD portion from your amendment, mm-hmm. if that would be of an assistance at this time.
We will be. It would have been easier if you'd done that first.
You have the amendments, Madam Chair.
Stop looking at you. You have that amendment later on.
You were looking at me and I didn't see you. Burning a hole in the side of my head.
You got it, Representative Dabney. Pardon me. Mm-hmm. Right. Representative Dabney, let's see. How did you vote? You voted...
I voted on the prevailing side.
So
no, I did not. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, then, Representative Dabney, you can repair now, then, if you voted no. Did you?
No, I voted aye. I voted with the chair. I knew that was important.
Madam Chair. Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, for the purposes of removing the FIAD requirement, I will move to reconsider.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. And now, Representative Dabney, you may...
No, you need
to... Oh, okay. Thank you. We will move to reconsider the A27 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right. Representative Dabney, you may make the amendments now that I thought you were going to make earlier.
And we clearly didn't get our semaphore flags aligned this morning, Madam Chair. My apologies. I'm working here on the fly with Ms. Larson. Mm-hmm. I would move on, working off the H2475A27 amendment, mm-hmm. to delete... From page 1, line 3, to page 5, line 19. And then there's more.
Good thing we have Ms. Larson there.
Delete page 5, line 22, through page 5, line 24. And lastly, delete page 5, line 29. To page 6, line 1. It's just scattered everywhere throughout the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Effective amendment.
Okay, so we need to do that one too. Representative Dabney, Mr. Crow says instead of 5.29, it needs to be 5.28.
Yes, Ms. Larson says that Mr. Crow is right. That's okay by me.
The
yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Lines 525 and 526 are being deleted, and I'm going to call on either Mr. Crow or Ms. Larson to.
No.
So these lines are the 10,000 of
21 needs to come out also. I'm just going to let the staff get situated.
Please.
And we'll have one of them read it back to us. And then I'm sure it'll be fine with Representative Dabney.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Good stuff today. I'm coming off a break.
He'll get over it. Hmm?
I don't
leave much left.
In about...
Okay. By Wednesday.
Why don't they just tell us what they're telling us? My
favorite. You know, neither are you. You can take that into your endorsement list.
Yeah,
I'm not as bad as you think.
Hey, how's that going, by the way?
Good.
You're going to clean up.
We're betting yeah. It's got all the science stuff in there.
I thought he was going to.
Yeah.
I'm going to call on you. Okay, members, we have it now. The staff has agreed, and I will call on Mr. Crow to tell us what we need to do to delete the idea of having a FIAD standard.
And Chair and members, you would delete lines 1-3 to 5-26, and then lines 5-28 through 6-1.
Any questions on that, on Representative Dabney's amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Yes. Representative Heidgerken.
Clarification, if Representative Dabney would explain exactly what his amendment is trying to do.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair and Representative Heidgerken and members, my amendment is intended to take out the FIAD amendment, the FIAD requirement in the H2475A27 amendment. I'm concerned about the impact of essentially an unfunded mandate on the schools at this time. It's the right thing, it's the wrong time.
And then Representative Heidgerken, the reason we voted that amendment out of this amendment is so we can now vote on and consider the remainder of the amendment, which is getting the QCOMP date and amount of money straight as to when we stop funding it and also the special education rulemaking. Okay? Any questions on what we now will vote on, which is the remainder of the amendment? Okay, well then we will vote on the A27 amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment as amended is adopted. What we're going to do now is go through one by one all the amendments that members have submitted to the bill. And in your packet, they are in chronological order. But for ease of going through the bill, we are going to go through them in bill order. So, numerical order. Isn't that the same as chronological?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. So, the First Amendment is the A24 amendment, and we'll give you some time to find it.
No.
24. Yeah. They're in numerical
That's right.
order.
Yeah, got them on that.
What are we doing
here?
That's
right.
824.
Yeah.
I'll never use that
Thank
one.
You.
Representative Dabney, the 824 amendment.
Madam Chair, thank you. Let's see if we can do this one in shorter order. The A24 amendment speaks to the school report card language that's in the bill. Currently, you can have data reported out by teacher team. The concern is that since we don't define that, a team could be one person. I think of the ELL program at Buffalo Community Middle School where I taught. Her name is Lori. That's not a team. This simply says that in order to aggregate or compile test data by teacher team, there must be at least three or more teachers. I spoke with Representative Briner about this, and she's comfortable with this language and this change.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I too would support the amendment. I think it's consistent with the testimony we heard from the MAG group and, who put together the growth value added model. The intent here of the report card has to do with identifying effective practices that lead to accelerated growth of learning tied to our standards eventually. And so we want to be able to identify those teams down to the team level of where those activities are happening in the state. So I do think this language is consistent with the testimony that we heard from the MAG group.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. I know you've done a lot of work on this along with Representative Briner, so that's very helpful. Any other discussion on the amendment? Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a question for Representative Dabney. Why is it that you want to have averages of teachers that we're looking at as opposed to accountability potentially with the test results we have over a period of time for individual teachers? Why wouldn't you want to be able to identify who is performing well in addition, of course, to teams? Why wouldn't you want to have that breakdown any further?
Representative
Demmer. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer. I'm not convinced, Representative Demmer, that our testing is sensitive enough to make those valid measures. I think of my own teaching experience where before teaching I worked on adolescent psychiatric units. So often the administration would consciously track some of the more challenging students into my classroom because of the experience that I brought. If all you were doing is comparing Mr. Dabney's class to Ms. Smith's class, you might see some differences based not on teaching aptitude or effectiveness, but by class composition, such as that. And I don't think our measures are sensitive enough to handle that at this time.
President Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would agree with that in that scenario, but I think when we're looking at a growth model and or value-added model, regardless of what level kids come in at, if we're measuring growth from whatever level they're going forward, wouldn't that be something that's measurable then? Because we could start with kids at wherever they're at and measure how they grow, and I think we have legislation in this bill and even in other places where we talk about growth models and value-added models where we actually could see the improvement in kids from wherever they start. And so, but I agree with you, it's not valid to look at, you know, this group against that group, but to look at within the group as the growth within those students. It seems to me we'd want to have detailed measurement and not average those out because we'd lose some of that data.
Representative
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I think some of that data will still be available to the school. The question is, how is it publicly reported? And given that I don't think we're quite there yet. We may get there over the years, but we're not there yet. I don't know that it's fair to try to compare apples and apples when we've still got apples and oranges.
Hearing Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, just to put a finer point on it, and Representative Demmer, I think you raised legitimate public policy questions, but the role of the school report card is to talk about and tell the story about the school, and not to tell the story about individual teachers. There may be other ways that we do that. I know some school districts, in fact, do that. Whether or not we as a state want to bite off on that big issue is a legitimate public policy question, but we're talking about the school report card at this point. And so the farthest down we can drill that in terms of talking about the school is the dynamics within the school, the smallest group dynamics, which would be these teams of teachers. So I don't think there's, you know, it's so much an argument against your, you know, query as much as it is fitting it within the structure of the school report card.
Representative Okay, hearing no further discussion, all in favor of the A24 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. The next one is Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A21 amendment.
So the A21, so that means you're not doing A20 or A25, Representative Morgan?
At this time, I would like to move the A21 amendment, Madam Chair.
A21 has been moved by Representative Morgan. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Reinert has done some good work on creating some additional reporting mechanisms to help us assess student progress and the relationship factors within schools and the other parts that go into making a good school and a good classroom environment. I have a concern, though, about the way that this the part of the bill is going to report this to the public. As a teacher, every year I conduct a student survey at the end of the year. However, there are two protections in that student survey. One is a protection for my students. I tell them, and I follow through on it, that I will not read their survey responses until after I have turned in their grades, so that they know for a fact that nothing they say in there will have an impact on the grade they receive in my class. That helps them be more honest with me. Number two, I promise them that I will not share what they've written with anybody else. And what that tells them implicitly is that there is nothing for them to gain in some kind of a relational battle that they may have developed with me over the course of a year in my class for being in any way adversarial in the way that they responded to me. They can be honest, they can be upfront, and they can say the things that they need to say to help me do my job better. I'm concerned that by opening up responses to the public in a subjective way, under circumstances that may be out of control of the teacher and the environment that they have established in the class, for students as young as fourth and fifth grade, that we may be creating a situation that affects in a negative fashion the relationship between the student and the teacher and the ability for the teacher to maintain the highest standards in their class as far as academic integrity and discipline. Because those are two areas that can often be interpreted by students in a negative way, even though in the long run it is in their best interest for the teacher to maintain firm discipline and set the highest academic standards. So I'm very concerned about the piece of the Reinert bill that will do this. So what I my amendment would do is to remove the section that says the quality of students' relationships with teachers, administrators, and other students would be part of this posted survey results.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Morgan, I appreciate the decision you're making. However, I have problems with the clause that you're amending in that I think that when students self-report their sense of school safety and their engagement in school, that that's just as subjective as the evaluations they do of us teachers. And so with that said, I have to oppose your amendment, even though I like what you are doing in regard to just that one little group of words, phrases. However, the whole Part E is very troublesome to me.
Well, we get one.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, members, I would oppose the amendment. Although I have to say, I've spoken with Representative Morgan prior that I don't think it does horrible damage to Representative Reinert's efforts in regard to one of the three indicators that she's looking to have added into the state report card. I would point out the members' language on page 10 on line 30, which says, must include summary data. The point here is that students will be asked to comment on a number of indicators, and so we're under sort of the rubric of multiple indicators, a number of multiple measures to be able to tell us in the public from their perspective the efficacy of their learning environment, of which one of these would be issues related to the relationship with teachers, administrators, and other students. And as this then will get reported into the report card, and by the way, this particular provision doesn't take into effect until out in the out years of 2011. In the meantime, what we're going to do is have a work group that's going to look at existing survey instruments to be able to forward those. But as the information comes forward, it'll be aggregate information. And it'll be aggregate information per school. So we'll be able to know about my school, the students' responses along a number of indicators, which all then get lumped together into one, scoring, if you will. And I do think Representative Morgan raises some important issues nonetheless about making sure we're not violating a sense of trust between teachers and students. And I don't have the specific answers about what happens to the very specific data. My understanding is that the very specific data for those schools where this information is currently collected remains at the schools, and that would be the expectation, certainly our expectation. I know Representative Diner's expectations. But again, members, we're talking about aggregated, not disaggregated information per school that's going to tell us something on the school report card. It's not meant to single out individual teachers and to set up any kind of a dynamic that can interfere between the relationship between teachers and students. I don't think the language does tremendous damage to Representative Biner's issues, so I think we can live with the results if it's added on. But I would oppose it in principle at this point.
Thank you very much. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. And I also agree, you bring up some great points. I'm opposed to this amendment because, if a business sends out a survey, it talks to its customers. And the customers in our system are the students and the parents. Those are the customers. And I do think that the relationship with the teacher and kind of the classroom and all of that is a huge item that I think could be included in any report card. And the thing with this, it is, like Representative Mariani mentioned, it's put together in kind of a summary data, so you're not going to see individual reporting. But I do think if a school is scoring low in a certain area, that's a red flag that has to be addressed. Now, I do think the key to all of this is going to be how the questions are phrased. And can you do this in kind of an objective manner as much as possible so you don't get into, well, boy, he made me work, but he's really tough. And even though down the road, that person's probably going to be their favorite teacher because he made them get on course, but at the time, they may not. So if you can kind of phrase the questions, I think that would be a real key. But I do think this is an important indicator, and it does get your feelings and a survey from your actual customers in this system, if you want to call students customers in kind of what's going on. So I would oppose this amendment.
Thank you very much. Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think I share the same sort of ambivalence, wanting to do this at one level and not liking the uncertainty at another level. And I do hope, Representative Morgan, that hopefully the groups that are most invested in this discussion will come together and talk about maybe what these questions would look like. What would the survey instrument be like at the forefront so that we can know in the future? I probably will vote with you on the amendment, but I do believe that we do have to have some kind of measure at some point on the student's experience, and maybe we can work on that as we move forward.
Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair. This is a question really for research. I know in White Bear we do a student survey in high school, I believe it is. Do other districts do that? And I guess my main question is, are we currently doing testing surveys in these grades now? Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, I don't know the answer to your specific question. This proposal here is all designed with the expectation that there is a process set forth engaging experts, stakeholders, and parents to come together to examine surveys in order to determine what would be an appropriate instrument to use for this purpose. The authors of this bill have spoken with experts in the field, including Dr. Jenny Norland Weaver, who has helped them and has been instrumental in this. And she is familiar with surveys that have already in use, I think, in Edina and elsewhere. But whether they're in your district, I don't know. My understanding from having listened to the testimony is that they are in use.
Madam Chair, I guess my point is that right now we are testing children and surveying children all the time, and we're not allowing teachers time to teach. And I'm really concerned about over-testing and over-surveying our children.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else? Representative Eric.
Madam Chair, I'd like to call for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Is there any other discussion on the bill before we take the vote? Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Brannon?
No.
Angel?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Dabney?
Pass.
Demmer?
Pass.
Detmer?
No.
Dietrich?
No.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
No.
Faust?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidbergen?
Pass.
Hillstrom?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland?
Yes.
Morgan?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Olson?
No.
Wales?
No.
Dabney?
Yes.
Yeah.
Demmer?
No.
Heidbergen?
There are 9 ayes and 12 nays. The amendment is not adopted. The next one is Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I would move the A29 amendment.
Representative Mariani has moved the A29 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, what this amendment will do, it speaks to 2 parts within the report card bill sponsored by Representative Ryder. And it speaks to the fiscal note that we received at the 11th hour at the last possible particular clock just recently. In fact, I didn't even get to look at the fiscal note until yesterday. And, Madam Chair, I was actually quite surprised and dismayed a little bit by the size of the fiscal note to it. It's almost an $11 million fiscal note. I happen to believe that the biggest chunk of that fiscal note is actually in error as it pertains to the implementation of the assistance to school districts who are needing assistance under the value-added growth model. We had actually intentionally written that language so that such assistance would not begin until beyond our tails a few years, but that didn't prevent the fiscal note from being written as if we were quickly providing that kind of assistance. I think, however, that there is a cogent argument that says that perhaps we could take one step at a time here. We can return to the issue of the department offering assistance to school districts at a future legislative session. So no need to bind at this point. Page 11 on lines 8 through 10 would strike the language that has the commission providing additional assistance for those who don't meet state growth norm under the Reinert language, and that's about $10 million, roughly, of that fiscal note. Lines 1.4 and 1.5 of the amendment speak to the rigorous coursework. Hold on, let me make sure I have that right. It is the survey, isn't it? Okay. It speaks to the student engagement survey. We have written the language so that it could be interpreted that the work group that we've asked the commissioner to convene would actually develop that instrument from scratch, and so ergo the larger fiscal note amount. And so we're clarifying that it is not their job to devise such an instrument, but rather to review an instrument that currently exists at the University of Minnesota and other commonly recognized survey instruments, and then to select one instrument. So that, therefore, would tighten up the language in terms of what we expect that group to do. And we think that that then answers the $1.2 million fiscal note that the department claims such an effort would require. And so for purposes of addressing the bulk of the fiscal note issues with the Brainerd bill, as well as with acceptance on our part that we can take these things in sort of smaller steps, I'm offering the A29 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And it's always a mystery to us how things that, whether it's the Department of Education or other agencies here in the state, if they want to do something, there seems to be little or no fiscal note. It can be accommodated, and if they don't, then the fiscal notes get to be a little bit big sometimes. So I'm also mystified on this one as to how we got an $11 million fiscal note. But I think that in good faith, you're offering this amendment to clear up that fiscal note, and I'm because I think it's very important that we pass this report card language, and I appreciate your amendment and certainly hope that it passes. Any other discussion on the A29 amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The A29 amendment is adopted. The next one in numerical order is the A6 amendment, and then going in the bill order, that's why we're taking that one next. Representative Erickson, is that one yours, or do you know which one of your members has the A6 amendment? It says it's an annual teacher evaluation required review for continuing contract teachers. And if no one's got that one, we can press on.
Madam Chair, it's probably mine. It's mine.
Okay.
You got me out of order because I had all calories organized for the occasion. So.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Representative Erickson moves the A6 amendment.
And I'd like a roll call, please.
And a roll call has been requested. Representative Erickson.
This is the review for continuing contract teachers, and gives the school board and the exclusive rep of the teachers the authority to develop an annual review process and evaluation for all teachers on continuing contracts through this joint agreement. So this won't be one having more power than the other. And the annual review process and evaluation must be aligned to best instructional practices in teaching and learning. And let's see. A school board and exclusive rep of the teachers must use Section 124A.413, sub 2, as the review for continuing contracts if a plan is approved by the Commissioner of Education. So I think that primarily it's peer review. I know that this is important to the governor, and I would like to support his belief that if we're going to have quality in our teaching, that we also allow the boards and the representatives of the bargaining units to develop an annual review.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. This was part of the governor's bill, like you said, and it was offered to me to put in my author's amendment, and information was given to me that all the groups had actually agreed upon it, but I later found they hadn't quite all agreed upon it. So we didn't put it in, but now we can have it discussed. Representative Dietrich, then Anzels, then Dabney, then Morgan. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I have a question for you. Since this is continuing contract teachers, would this include coaches, that coaches need to be reviewed annually?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, no, unless they are teachers and coaches at the same time. So it doesn't separate.
Representative Dietrich.
Because notice it's teachers.
Yes. So do you think that there is a hole in the system then if we're going to annually review teachers that we're not annually reviewing coaches? Or any adult who is assigned to a co-curricular after-school activities, sometimes they can spend just as much time with children as the teacher does in a school day.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, you make a good point, but I think maybe that's for future debate as to where we want to go with those who work in co-curricular and those who teach and coach in co-curricular activities. This is primarily focusing on what happens in the classroom.
Representative Van Zyl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I would strongly suggest dismissing this motion out of hand if you believe in local control. Certainly, locally elected boards of education can make these decisions on their own with their workers. For the legislature or the governor or state government or the department to, by edict, literally, force this upon school districts, I think, is inappropriate. So I'd urge members to support local control and vote no.
Representative Dabney.
I'll pass Representative covered my comment.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would also urge a no vote on this, but for a different reason than Representative Van Zyl. I would recommend a no vote because this amendment doesn't do anything. The current law requires school boards and exclusive representatives to develop a peer review process for continuing contract teachers. That's currently in law. And if you look at the changes that are being made to the law here, it has this initial section, Part A, starting on line 1-5, that talks about requiring annual review of continuing contract teachers. But that would cost a lot of money. So in order for this not to have a cost, they had to add on a section that basically makes the entire amendment meaningless by saying that peer review for continuing contract teachers, which is already in law, may be used to meet the requirements in paragraph A. So I'd suggest we vote no just because we don't need to be adding text to a bill that doesn't do anything when we've already got the law that does what this bill wants, what this amendment wants to do.
Representative Morrow.
Actually, Representative Morgan said exactly what I was to say. I'll have the book back.
Oh, yeah.
You're checking on current law, so you're covered, too. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was going to be my question. Is there a fiscal note to this? And I can't imagine that there would not be, but I... so, Representative Erickson, if you wouldn't mind answering that question.
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Dietrich, I don't think so, because what I think will happen, even though some of my colleagues are saying differently, is that the peer review that's already in place could be used to fulfill this requirement. And I think that that's what districts would do, because they do have a peer review in place, which is what line 1.14 refers to. Peer review for continuing contract teachers may be used to meet the requirement of what is being called now a mandate, the peer review that's discussed or set out in lines 1.5 through 1.11. So I think districts would choose to use the latter, which would be the peer review they already have in place.
Representative Dietrich.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Erickson, so do you see that this would go in tandem with QComp? I see QComp as a lot of peer review, peer support, that type of thing. So are you suggesting that we need two systems, or do you think the two merge, or what do you see for the future if this were to pass?
I think that is going to be up to the school district. I have heard from superintendents and school boards that they wish they had something that was a little bit more, that is a review system that's more collaborative. It could be used in the QComp program if that's written into the plan. But this, I think, is empowering school boards that may not feel that the peer review that's in place now is working as well as they want it to. And I also know teachers who would like to have more of a review, an evaluation system if they're not a part of QCOMP, because I think QCOMP is forcing evaluation in some districts.
Thank you. There has been a question from the audience about testimony, and so I should make that announcement so everybody can hear it. We are not taking testimony on the amendments. We'll take testimony at the end of the at the end after the whole proposal is amended, and then we can then we'll vote after that. But I will say for the request of the testifier, when I mentioned a minute ago that everybody agreed on this, the one group that did not agree on it was Education Minnesota, and I think perhaps we've covered the arguments they might make that it's already being done and so forth. So seeing no other legislators wishing to talk, the clerk will take the roll.
Grayling?
No.
Enzels?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Detmer?
Yes, yes.
Dietrich?
No.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidgerken? Hilton?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Morrow?
No.
Olson?
Yes.
Swales?
No.
The A6 amendment, there are 5 ayes and 15 nays, so the amendment is not adopted. Representative Demmer, you're next with the A10 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A10 amendment.
Representative Demmer moves the A10 amendment. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is relatively simple, Madam Chair and members. What this does is lowers the amount allocated for staff development to 1% from the current 2%. And it basically gives the school board the opportunity to utilize that. I think in a time when schools are really struggling with their general fund revenues, with the 1% and 2% that was put in the bill last year, Madam Chair, this gives them a little more flexibility and a little bit more opportunity to put the money towards some general needs that they may have, whether it's salaries, whether it's heat and lights, whether it's operations. I had a couple of my school districts request that they have an opportunity to do this. So that's the amendment, Madam Chair, and I would appreciate a yes vote.
Okay, any questions for Representative Demmer or comments on the A10 amendment? Okay. Hearing none, then we'll vote on the A10 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. The next one, Representative Demmer, A9. Representative Demmer, did you wish to offer the A9 amendment?
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken was bothering me, so I was...
Well, that's all right. Representative Olson was bothering me. I couldn't hear either.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A9 amendment.
Representative Demmer moves the A9 amendment.
Madam Chair, what this does, if you didn't like the 1%, this is a similar amendment, and what this does is basically says that the school board can set the amounts, and they can do up to 2% as they have now, but instead of saying they have to do 2%, it's really about, and Representative Ansel will like this, because it's totally about local control. The school board can basically set that amount. And so I know I'll get his vote, Madam Chair, and I'm hoping to get the rest, too, because, again, at the discretion of the school board, they would set the amount that they set aside for staff development. And again, it is local control, and it's allowing them the opportunity to utilize revenues in a way they should be best utilized in their school district.
All right, Representative Abney.
Madam Chair, Representative Dammer, I assume since the A10 amendment was for up to 1% and this is up to 2%, this one must be twice as good as the last amendment. I would speak against it, and I would speak against it because of the language stricken on page 1, lines 13 through 17. Districts can already do this. They can waive the 2% set aside. They just have to do it collaboratively with their teachers. I think our districts are stronger and our classrooms are stronger if work is done collaboratively with the teachers, and particularly on staff development. So I would urge a no vote.
Yeah, to the author of the amendment, local control is important to me, but collective bargaining is as well.
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, I agree that local control is so important that I'd like to ask for a roll call vote on that.
A roll call has been requested. Any other discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Reiling?
No.
Enzel?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Detmer? Dietrich?
No.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heisserkin? Hilstrom?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland?
Yes.
Morgan?
Nope.
Morrow?
Nope.
Olson?
Yes.
Swales?
There being 6 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Amendment A9. Representative Demmer, you're on a roll. A26. You must have amended the sections of the bill that are all right together.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I said move the A26 amendment.
Representative Demmer moved the A26 amendment. Representative Demmer.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, those of you who have been in this committee for a number of years will recognize this. this is my annual attempt to remove the collective bargaining system out of the way of teachers, school boards, and parents when there's school going on. It's my firm belief, Madam Chair and members, that we can get our teachers' collective bargaining units and school boards to get their work done before school starts. And what this does is it says, number one, that they must come to an agreement before the beginning of school in their contract year. They can start, I think, as early as March. At least we had that in one version. But basically, they need to be done by the time school starts. Otherwise, they would suspend the negotiations until school is done in the springtime. And I've called this a lot of different things, but basically it's to set the parents and the adults get their work done before school starts. Once school starts, it's about the kids. It's not about negotiating. It's about things that are important to kids, both for administrators and for teachers. The other thing I do, Madam Chair, I believe this is effective July 1st of 09, which would be in the next biennium. So there is an incentive here also for school districts that do get done on a timely basis of $35 per adjusted pupil unit. So, Madam Chair, it's good for kids. This is definitely something that's holding adults accountable. These contracts expire on June 30th, and this gives them till roughly September 1st, whenever people start school, and that is almost 2 months after the contract expires to have their contract done. So, Madam Chair, I think it's a good thing for our schools, a good thing for kids. We know it can be done. It's good for the kids because of the atmosphere these contracts create when they are negotiated during the school year. We need a deadline, and we also need an incentive, and this has both. And Madam Chair, I request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Thank you, Representative Demmer. Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about what this would cost. Is there a fiscal note for this? Do you have any idea what that would be?
Representative Emmer.
Madam Chair, I do not have a fiscal note. It goes into the next biennium.
Representative Gilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this is a question for staff. Does this violate our sales target then?
Representative Hillstrom, the bill that we have before us, we exactly spend our sales target, so we don't have any money for that. We don't have a fiscal note for this bill, but I think Representative Faust would be right that there would be some sort of fiscal note if we had one. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think this question is for staff as well. Let's suppose that Representative Demmer is fantastically successful and each district settles his contract before Labor Day. Mr. Strong, Mr. Crow, how much would that cost the state?
Madam Chair and members, about $32 million in fiscal 2010 and 11.
Representative Demmer, you wild spender, you. Representative Demmer and then Representative Olson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. What better place to put the money but toward kids and teachers and education, Madam Chair?
We're glad to hear you say that, Representative Demmer. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer an amendment to the amendment.
An amendment to the amendment. Representative Olson.
On 1-6, page 1, line 6.
Mm-hmm.
Delete financial incentives, capitalized timely. On 1.8, after the word fall, put a period and delete the rest of the amendment up to the effective date on 1.24.
Okay.
And I'll ask counsel to tell me if that's not workable.
Representative Olson, that's a good idea. I'm going to ask counsel to tell us if it's workable and also repeat it.
Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Olson.
I forgot one thing. On 1.7, mm-hmm. Change that to must, and make signs singular instead of plural. I'm simply creating a mandate. A public employer must sign a collective bargaining agreement with the exclusive representative of the teachers before the first student contact day in the fall, period.
Right. I think we have it then, but we'll have staff repeat it. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on the H2475A26, page 1, line 6, delete A, friends. On page 1, line 7, delete that signs and insert must. On page 1, line 8, delete everything after fall and delete the remainder of the new language through page 1, line 23 up to the period.
All right. Representative Demmer, do you care to comment since it was your original amendment? Representative Olson isn't such a wild spender as you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would have a question for Representative Olson. I understand the financial incentive. That can work either way. Must sign the collective bargaining agreement, Representative Olson, if you would answer. What would be the consequences of not signing one then? We don't have anything specified, so when we say must, what if they don't?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, and members, you got to start somewhere. We're moving from an incentive to simply mandating it, and if they don't follow it, we'll come back with something afterwards. This is a gracious way to begin with a mandate.
Representative Van Pelt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Olson, this is anything but gracious. This is punitive. This blows up school districts. This conjures up replacement workers, work stoppages, communities in turmoil, parents and children in turmoil for no good reason. Let's get serious about this. Collective bargaining works when both sides are allowed at the table, unfettered, to bargain as equals. And we get good products. Many times not a product that either side is totally enamored with, but nevertheless a product so we can get back to the business of educating our young people. So I suggest members vote no.
Thank you. We'll take Representative Olson and then Representative Demmer. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Unzelt. I really appreciate those comments, but I'd sure like to know what amendment you're talking about, because Representative Demmer just asked me, well, what happens? I said nothing. I'm trying to bring a gracious way to create a mandate. So it's not punitive because nothing happens. Nobody blows up. Nothing gets blown up. The turmoil, on to the contrary, however, the current system, I think, is very tumultuous, causes a lot of turmoil. When something does happen during the school year and the kids, students are sitting there in class and have to listen to this discussion that they won't have a teacher and they won't have school going on. Representative Demmer's amendment is very good and on track, but I just can't stomach the money in the current situation of our economy. And back to business, that's exactly what the students are wondering. When will they be back to business if they have to leave? So all your points are really good for my amendment, except for the turmoil, because this will eliminate turmoil if they follow it. With that good discussion at hand, Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw my amendment and let everybody vote on Representative Demmer's amendment. I mean no disrespect to Representative Demmer, but I think this discussion is warranted, and I'll bring my amendment up on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Demmer, did you care to comment now, or are you done?
Sure, Madam Chair, very quickly, and this is a comment about environment. I think we all know of school districts, Madam Chair, and members, where there have been negotiations that have stretched into the school year. We know it affects kids. We know it affects communities. We know it is not healthy. The kids are used as leverage, and that is just not a good situation. What this amendment does, members, it goes into the next year. Yes, it's $32 million. If I'm not mistaken, our increase in our funding in education in the last biennium was $800 million. And I think that by putting incentive in place for schools to have their negotiations and teachers to have their negotiations done before school starts is an excellent way to put incentive there to have something that should be done anyway. So, Madam Chair and members, I would really appreciate a yes vote, and I understand Representative Wolfson's amendment, but I do appreciate you withdrawing that, because I think this is the carrot instead of the stick, and I think it's healthy for our schools, it's healthy for our kids, and quite frankly, I think it's healthy for administrators, school board members, and for teachers also. I think they'd all support this.
I'm going to call this is Representative Olson in a minute, but I just want to tell members this will be our 8th amendment. We have 14 more. We have this room till midnight if you want to keep going. We'll be here. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kidding. Madam Chair, just for the record, I'm going to abstain from voting on this because I am in significant conflict with the money, but I very much support the effort, and I will have an amendment on the floor to that effect.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
See no one else. The clerk will take the roll.
Skriving?
No.
Enzels?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Detmer?
Yes.
Beatrice?
Yes.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
No.
Faust?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidgerken?
No.
Hillstrom?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland?
Yes.
Morgan?
No.
Morrow?
No.
Olson?
Pass. Erbstein.
Swales?
Mm-hmm. No.
There are 5 ayes and 15 nays, so the A26 amendment is not adopted. Representative Erickson, the A8 amendment.
A18 amendment?
A18? Oh, I think the A18 is yours as well, but we're doing A8 next.
What is she refusing now?
Thank you.
teachers for a second.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A8.
All right, Representative Erickson moves the A8 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Well, this is a repeal of the January 15th deadline for settling contracts.
Okay, and so a lot of what we've discussed may apply or may not apply here. Switching gears. All right. Mr. Crow has also informed me that, so we don't have to go through a Representative Morrow question, that this one spends $500,000 in the tail. And the bill we have before us without amendments is spends all the tail.
Madam Chair, would you repeat that? This amendment spends
$500,000? Representative Erickson, I'm going to have Mr. Crow explain it, but he said it spends it in the tail. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, right now we have a penalty in law,
right,
a reduction of general education aid. We forecast that kind of, if you think of it in terms of as revenue to the state. In other words, we collect a penalty. And the forecast penalty aid reduction for 10 and 11 is $500,000. So if this bill passed, we would be paying districts $500,000 more than under current law, because they wouldn't be penalized for not settling.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. Representative Erickson, or anybody before we vote on this bill?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Okay, the A8 amendment is withdrawn. The A2 amendment, then, is Representative Erickson's as well. The A2 amendment, Representative Erickson, do you want to move that one?
And Chair, I'll move it. I thought it was Representative Demers, but I'll be happy to move it.
Okay, Representative Erickson moves the A2 amendment. Representative Demers, did you wish to speak to it?
Well, yes, Madam Chair, I do. I think I can
get it.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
That one.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is similar to legislation or amendment that I offered last year on the, or it is the same amendment I think I offered on the bill last year. And basically what it says, Madam Chair, is that we need structurally balanced school district budgets. This basically says that a school administration can't spend more money in their biennium than they have coming in. They have to say that, they have to show that the money that they're going to spend in their approved budget going forward is covered by the revenues coming in. And if they don't have the revenues coming in, they can't approve that budget. It's very simple, Madam Chair. It goes to, I believe, common sense. When I was in business, I couldn't spend more than I had. I think in our personal checkbooks, we can't spend more than we have. And I think in state government, and we have a balanced budget, we can't spend more than we have. And this does the same thing for school districts. For 2 years, they can't, it does give them a 2-year time frame, but they can't spend more than they will get in that 2-year period. So, Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call, too, and I think it's a good amendment.
Representative Olson.
Oh, I'm sorry. Out of habit, Madam Chair, I was raising my hand for the roll call.
All right. There's a lot of force of habit around here. Representative Morgan, do you have a habit, or are you raising your hand?
I'm raising my hand, Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Demers, so there is currently a law on the books about structurally balanced. So you repeal, I see, okay. So you're repealing that and replacing it with?
No, we repealed it last year.
I'm sorry, okay.
He's trying to put it back.
Okay.
This was part of Representative Benson's bill last year. It passed, and now Representative Erickson, Representative Demer are trying to put it back in again.
Then let me ask you this, Representative Demer or Representative Erickson. You're saying this forbids school districts from spending more than they have revenue coming in? And if it does, my question to you is, doesn't that take away local control from districts who, for short-term purposes, make decisions about spending down fund balances in order to maintain programs and class size ratios for students?
Representative Demers.
Well, Madam Chair and members, what this says is that they cannot spend more than the revenues they have coming in, taking into account state aid formulas and also ongoing revenues and expenditures. And they cannot use one-time monies in this bill. This would say they can't use one-time monies to balance the budget that's for an ongoing expenditure. And I think that's just prudent financial controls. And it is very much about local control, because just as we are looking at a $1 billion budget deficit in the state and have to do something about that, school districts have to do something about theirs if they're out of balance. And so it's very consistent with what we currently do at the state level.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Demmer, I guess that is my concern, because even we as a state are going to be looking at spending down some cash balances, some perhaps the budget reserves and the cash flow accounts. I know that in 2003, when the legislature made fixes to a large budget deficit from one-time resources, were tapped. I don't think we should be stepping into the shoes of the school boards and making decisions that affect programming and class sizes for kids in their school districts like this. I think we ought to preserve them in when times are tough. We ought to preserve local school boards all of the flexibility they have to use all the resources they have available to them to provide the best they can for the kids.
Representative Benson and then Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer, I'm just curious, because this, of course, was debated before, and maybe you could give us a little history. It was my understanding that this proposal was generated by the fact that the state, in a previous budgetary problem, was shifting school funds. And so my opposition to the law was that since the state government had been irresponsible in shifting school funding in the past, they then gave the local school districts a double whammy by telling them that they could not make any adjustments on their own to make up for the failure of the state. In what way is my logic incorrect?
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, actually, in my time on the school board, when I was in Hayfield before I came to the legislature just before, we were actually undoing shifts that were put in the 90s under DFL control. And we spent many, many years as a school board trying to catch up to those shifts that were put back in place. There was a minor shift that was then brought back and fixed in the time that I was here. It might have been before your term, before last year. So actually, we didn't have a shift in place. It was already fixed. This is simply about financial accountability. And it's about giving local school boards the opportunity to make their decisions. It's totally about local control. This is not about the state saying how you spend your money or where you spend your money. That was already done when we refused to say we're going to cost them $15 for not having the contract done at a certain time and not giving them the opportunity to gain $35 by having it on time. That goes against the local control and against what's best for schools. We already did that. This is just simply saying that school boards, it's totally in your control, but you need to make sure that the money going in is covered by the money, that the money going out is covered by the money coming in. And it doesn't say anything about shifts.
Many of us on this committee were teachers or school board members, and I, like Representative Demmer and Representative Heidgerken and others, was a school board member. And my school district, without the state telling us, was structurally balanced before I came to the legislature. We did that, and we knew that was our job, and we did not need the state to tell us that. Representative Dietrich was a former school board member as well. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to this bill, when I do talk to at least my school district about it, they say that this bill is really a non-entity from a structurally balanced issue, as Representative Greiling has already described, because they do this on their own. So what it, at this point in time, and I've always supported this bill in the past just because a good school district does this on its own, but at, in this point in time, what it is it's another unfunded mandate. It is just one more thing that the school districts have to do, and then they submit to the state, and I'm not even sure what the state necessarily does with it. But either way, that's just the information that I've gotten, so I've somewhat changed my position on this piece of legislation. But Representative Denver, maybe you can answer this for me. I anticipate a deficit next year, and if so, we would probably, and I can't speak for anybody else, I would probably be advocating for some level of shifting to help us get through those tough times. And I know not everybody in this room does, but I do. So in that case, at least my school district is forced then to do some short-term borrowing to balance the budget, and as opposed to making big reductions in certain areas and then building them back up and that type of stuff. So does this structurally balanced language omit the ability for them to do that type of accounting?
Representative Hammer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich, you make an excellent point. And I think if we did get to that, and I have, and I think in times when there is an opportunity to make an adjustment for a year and come back at another year, as you said, I would support that also, and we've done that. And I would say that no, this wouldn't. If it does, we'd have to account for that to make sure that we don't put them in that sort of situation. We don't want that sort of up and down, that's for sure.
Right.
I agree with you.
Okay, I don't see anyone else on the list, and the roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Freiling?
No.
Enzels?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Detmer?
Yes.
Dietrich?
No.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidgerken?
No.
Hillstrom?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Morrow?
No.
Olson?
Yes.
Wales?
There are 5 ayes and 15 nays, so the A2 amendment is not adopted. The A18 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A18 amendment.
Representative Erickson moves the A18 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In committee, this is about use of one-time funds, ensuring that school district that has received state aid specifically designated as one-time uses it within that school year and does not carry it forth into the following fiscal year as an ongoing part of their operations.
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd urge a no vote on this amendment. We already have local control on this. It's just kind of restricting school districts again on what they can do and can't do, and they know how to handle their own budgets. You do not have levy authority.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call. Mr. Griff Erickson requests a roll call. I see no other discussion, so the clerk will take the roll.
Freiling?
No.
Enzels?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer?
Yes.
Detmer? Dietrich?
No.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidgerken?
No.
Hillstrom?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Morrow?
No.
Olson?
Yes.
Wales?
No.
We all tend to follow George's lawyers.
Amen.
There being 4 ayes and 16 nays, the A18 amendment does not prevail. This is not adopted.
On a good day.
Okay, members, unfortunately, and to everybody here, we have just
while originally being told we did have this room as long as we want it, we have now just found out that we don't.
We're not leaving.
And, yeah. And if it were, unfortunately, the bad news is that the chair of the committee that does have this this room scheduled is much, much more senior than I.
Oh.
It is Representative Bernie Leader.
Oh.
And as we all know, he's got a lot of seniority. So we are going to recess and reconvene in hopefully, let's make it 10 after 4 so people can have a break. But at 10 after 4, we will reconvene in room 300 South.
Ooh.
The meeting is in recess until for 15 minutes. I'll reconvene the meeting, and we don't have anybody down for the A-19 amendment. Is there anybody listed for that, or is that one we're not doing? He said it was not. He's the next one. All right. All right, and Garofalo isn't here for A-16. How about A-4? Who's that one? Okay, Representative Erickson, A-4.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A-4.
Representative Erickson moves the A-4 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an idea that I got from the 2006 submissions by superintendents under unfunded mandates, as well as their category. I believe they called it not friendly to public education, or mandates that do not promote public education. And this has to do with having an American Indian committee in the school district. Present mandate is 10, and I am proposing to change that to 10%.
All right, any discussion? All in favor then, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
A4 is not adopted. The next one, unless Representative Demmer is here, or Representative Garofalo then, is Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, we move the A7 amendment.
Representative Mariani moves the A7 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, members, this deals with two issues. One is the current contact hour reimbursement rate for ABE. The last time we did the formula was in 2000, and since then, inflation alone has really cut into the value of those reimbursements, so that the contact hour reimbursement rate has actually declined. It's actually lower now than it was in the year 2003. And because of that, some of the programs have been forced to cut back. And so what this change would do is it would allow us to increase the contact hour reimbursement rate without increasing the ABE appropriations. And then the second part of the bill has to do with GED reimbursement. The fees for GED tests are continuing to go up, and of course that's going to be a real barrier for low-income students, which is a good portion of the students who are accessing and using the GED test. And right now, I'm told that the fees are running about $100 per student, but we're reimbursing at $20 per test. So this won't cover that $400, so we step it up to a rate that's closer to that of $40. And then the final other thing is that, just to show that there will be a fiscal impact with this, is that we're not currently utilizing the appropriation, the $125,000 per year that we're appropriating. So this is meant to work within that appropriation.
So no fiscal note. Very good. Any discussion of the A7 amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A7 is adopted. Representative Garofalo, A16.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One second here, Ken. So, now, Madam Chair, I've always had the unique ability of getting everybody mad at me, and I was hoping today to get my Republican friends mad at me before I got my Democrat friends mad at me. But I think we'll
All right, we'll go ahead. I'll move the A16 amendment, and I'll ask for a roll call on it, Madam Chair.
Representative Grappa moves the A16 amendment, and he has requested a roll call, so a roll call will be taken. Representative Grappa.
Madam Chair, members, the handout's being done, getting passed out, showing the runs in this bill and how it affects individual districts. Madam Chair, members, right now, under current statute, the integration aid formula is broken down into three separate categories. One is you can be eligible for $92 per pupil in funding. The second category is that you're eligible for $129 in per pupil funding. The other categories are specific in statute. They identify three specific school districts by name: Duluth, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. Duluth being $175, Minneapolis and St. Paul are identified in statute again at $445. I will put aside my concerns about the integration program and the legislative auditor's report on it, showing how these dollars are being used, and in a moderate, reasonable consensus fashion, have crafted an amendment to leave the integration program intact, but to make it the same. It takes the same principles that are in this bill, that is, a child is a child, and take the school districts that are eligible for the integration program and give them the same state aid, which works out to $175 per pupil. If you're not eligible for the program now, you're not eligible for the program afterwards. It simply removes the three statutory requirements, the three school districts that are cited in statute, and treats them the same as the rest of the school districts. With that, Madam Chair, I'd ask for member support.
Very good. Any discussion? Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Under the integration revenue, we've had some large discussions to share that integration revenue. I don't think at this time we need to have amendments or have any type of discussion on how these dollars are to go. I think the following year we'll have plenty of discussion on where these dollars need to go. We had discussion in the past. We did not come to a good conclusion yet, and so I would hope that that members would vote this down.
Any other discussion? Representative Hillstrom. Thank you, Madam Chair. As someone who sat on Representative Dominguez's task force, I get to hear a lot of the controversy, and Representative Garofalo, my district would benefit tremendously from your amendment, and I even had a bill to do this very thing. However, I did not want to do the change at the expense of basically Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. And so while I do believe we need reforming in this formula, and this was one of the things that I had hoped to get from my district, which I was not successful in this year, I don't think that this is the right way to go about it.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. I agree with you, and Representative Dominguez, as members may recall, we need another $30 million to do this funding reform for integration revenue the way we would like to do it and the way Representative Dominguez proposed. We just don't happen to have the $30 million this year, so it's contingent upon next year. But that $30 million is so that we can have a fair funding formula based on the legislative auditor's report, and so that we don't take from the districts most in need. And we had our PMB, this biennium, the achievement gap, the opportunity gap, so this amendment would certainly cut into that. So hopefully we can wait until next year. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Greiling?
No.
Gonzalez?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
We need to pass on first and find the amendment.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer? Detmer?
Yes.
Dietrich? Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heigerkin? Hillstrom?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland? Morgan? Morrow? Olson? Quayle?
No.
Brown?
No.
There being four ayes and 10 nays, the A16 amendment is not adopted. And I might add, a lot of members are now still in room 10 because some of our members, many of them are on transportation. So we have members running back and forth, but that's why we're missing so many members. Representative Morrow is one of them down in transportation. Representative Demmer is here now, so you can get yourself situated, Representative Demmer, and we're ready to take your A19 amendment, which we skipped when you weren't here.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Madam Chair, what this is, as you know, we have integration aid and integration plans that have to be put in place by school districts. And when a school district is adjoining another school district or within a certain locale or a certain jurisdiction or a certain, what's the word I'm looking for? Close proximity, that's the word. When they're in a certain proximity, they are then required also to do an integration plan with revenue. Basically what this does is it gives that adjoining school district the option of doing that integration plan with the funding. And if they don't do it, they wouldn't get the funding. If they do the plan, they would get the integration funding. And it simply says, instead of saying that you have to do an integration plan, it would say you may do one. I have one of my districts that the reason it came up is they really don't have an issue, but they're close to Rochester. And so they have to do a plan, and it's really just an exercise that they have to go through, and the funding basically covers what they do, and it's not necessary, Madam Chair, for them to do that. But others may need to do that, so that's why I made it optional. So I ask for everybody's support.
Any discussions on the A19 amendment? Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this goes back to the integration revenue discussions we've had in the past. I would hope that members vote this down. I think we need to have more discussions again on how the process is, and if we're going to give preference to certain districts, I think we really need to have a discussion on where these dollars go. So I hope that this is voted down.
Thank you. And this is part of our current desegregation rule, which of course now Representative Demmer is wanting to statutorily because it does not withstanding the rules. But those rules were worked out with a lot of legal considerations, I believe. So I'm not sure that this is a wise amendment. Any other discussion? The clerk, did we get a rule? No. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The A19 amendment is not adopted. Let's see, Representative Marlhill, no. Representative Garofalo, A14.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll move the A14 amendment and request a roll call on it.
Representative Garofalo moves the A14 amendment and request a roll call. Representative Garofalo.
And Madam Chair, have they passed out the...
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Madam Chair, members, right now the compensatory funding formula is probably one of the more convoluted and confusing parts of our overall education funding formula. And it has a factor in it called a concentration factor. What this does is basically it's a compression algorithm so that the higher the concentration formula, the curve grows in a geometric fashion as opposed to arithmetic. I've had staff look around the nation. We have not been able to find a funding formula where this is in place. It is not rationally based. There is no science that measures that twice the concentration factor justifies a 500 or 700% increase in the per pupil funding formula. And just for some numbers so that people are aware, if you take a look at this and it shows per child in poverty numbers. For a child in poverty who's either in a child in poverty is determined by a student who is eligible for the free or reduced lunch program. The reduced lunch program counting as half a compensatory unit. Never mind the fact that there's no science that says that a compensatory unit, or a child in reduced program has half the cost of a free child, but we'll leave that in and of itself. But a child in poverty in the Lakeville School District right now, they receive an extra $294 for the services of that child. If that same child were to move to the Randolph School District, they would get an extra $316. Again, the school district receives $316 for the well-recognized fact that children from at-risk families cost more to educate. Same child moves to the Farmington School District, slight increase, $482 in additional funding. That then same child, if they move to the Minneapolis School District, would be worth $2,426 in additional funding. Same child, same at-risk factors, same problems at home, but they receive anywhere from a 500% to a 700% increase in funding for the school district. And Madam Chair, members, one of the reasons why we have such a problem in reforming the school funding formula is because, quite simply, people are insisting that clauses like this be grandfathered into it. So what I've done is I have graciously allowed the free and reduced program to stay the same at 0.5 and 1. However, a child in poverty is a child in poverty. And for each one of those qualifying students, each school district will receive $1,495. And if people don't like the concentration factor, if they have an opposition to that, to the removal of that, I would tell you, don't blame me. That's not where I got the idea from. I didn't come up with this on my own. I got the idea from PS Minnesota. They eliminated the concentration factor. Now, I'm not going to harbor any illusions that this bill, should it pass today, would actually make it into law. Let me suggest that it would probably be pre-conferred. But let me suggest to you that there should be sent a message that this is unacceptable in law. No one can make a rational, factual basis for saying that a child in poverty in one school district gets a 700% increase versus a child in poverty in another school district. Madam Chair and members, I ask for your support of the amendment.
And, of course, one thing to remember about the PS Minnesota report was that they were giving everybody a lot more money, a lot less property taxes. And then the other cost differentials were going to be funded substantially higher. So I think you pulled out one piece, Representative Garofalo, that would be a pretty unfair piece if we're going to be looking at the schools most in poverty, the schools most in need of closing the achievement gap. You're right. You heard the wrath of the chair with this amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of Representative Garofalo. I would urge a no vote on this. I could do the more class-oriented argument that the groundskeeper's child in Wayzata of one child in a low-income child in a class of 30 is different than schools in North Minneapolis where it's not 30 children in poverty out of 30, it's more like 35 children in poverty out of 30 in a class, being a very different situation, but I won't. Representative Garofalo, what's unacceptable is the growing rate of extreme poverty, particularly among children in Minnesota. What's unacceptable is the targeting by predatory lenders of low-income and minority communities for their toxic mortgage products and the foreclosures that have flowed from that. What's unacceptable is the health disparities among communities of color and low-income communities and the commonality of if you're a person of color, you're going to be low-income in our state and our country. And what's unacceptable is issues like lead paint levels in homes in low-income neighborhoods. What's unacceptable is the families who are struggling to deal with all of the challenges of poverty along with their community and your desire to take money away. I ask for no vote.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my friend Representative Dabney, I appreciate your comments and advocacy for your school district. Two things. Number one, from a policy standpoint, I would tell you that the current concentration factor, if you take a close look at it, it's actually based on school level. So there is a financial incentive for school districts across the state to cram kids, poor kids, into one school. And second of all, and my friend Representative Dabney, you mentioned unacceptable. Let me tell you what's unacceptable, Madam Chair and members. Unacceptable is the Minneapolis public schools ending up with $16 million more than they expected. Unacceptable is, quote, the rest of the legislature is upset because Minneapolis gets 46% more per pupil than the state average, end quote. Now, Madam Chair and members, if you don't like that quote, if that bothers you, don't get mad at me. Get mad at the Minneapolis state representative who is bragging in his campaign literature to his citizens about sticking it to the suburbs in rural Minnesota.
Do you want to talk about unacceptable? That's unacceptable. Madam Chair, members, I would ask for your support of the amendment.
Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And we've talked about compensatory revenue for a number of years. And it always tends to come back to beating up on Minneapolis, basically. But members of rural Minnesota need to be very careful. Because I went and, you know, we heard a lot about how Minneapolis got all this money, but yet when I looked at the runs from last year, and maybe Mr. Strong can verify this, but the two, for fiscal year 08, the districts that were getting the most per student, I think, were coming from my district, Herman Norcross and Campbell Pinta, both over 13,000. And then I went and looked a little further at those districts that were $10,000 per pupil or more. And my review, but I saw 45 districts over $10,000 per pupil. 37 of those 45 came from rural Minnesota. 82% on the highest ones are coming out of rural Minnesota. And I guess I don't want people to start looking at some of those districts as to why they're up there, because I think there's a need factor. That's why you have a complicated education funding system to match compensatory, sparsity, equalization, all these things that may help one district, but another district helped by another part of the formula, which I agree with. Also, if we truly are going to narrow the achievement gap, which I think should be a goal from everyone, whether or not I'm from Dilworth or St. Paul or Minneapolis, Duluth, that should be our goal. I want to target those dollars where the need is the greatest. I think as a state, if we raise up all, for, you know, all boats rise when you raise those standards. But another thing, and more specific to Representative Garoppolo's bill, so I'm looking at the last line here. Is this the data, the run for your amendment? This compensatory revenue, is this, I presume, is this the... I quickly looked through there, and this isn't going to be exact as I'm trying to do this, but I counted those districts that are losing dollars. 43 rural districts are losing dollars out of this, 5 metro districts. 43 rural, 5 metro. So if you think compensatory is just a Twin City metro thing, it's not. And especially when you get out to some really sparse rural districts that not only have property poor, but a high number of minorities, which a lot of people don't recognize this, this is very important to those districts and districts that need it the most. And I can name off several in my area that I represent that use compensatory, and they would lose from this formula. So, members, let's look at a couple things. First of all, the achievement gap. If, in fact, we want to close the achievement gap, we've got to target dollars where they need to go. And they're going to go to higher, to some other districts. Also, if we're going to look at one factor, I'm afraid whether or not this one benefits you, you've got to be willing to look at all the factors that may hurt your district. And I know the PS Minnesota is looking at some different things, and I think that's another reason not to deal probably with this. Let's wait to see what they come up with also. So I guess I would strongly oppose a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And we are going to, even though this is the last day that we're meeting before bill deadlines, we are going to have a hearing whenever the Senate catches up with us in a couple, 3 weeks on the education finance reform proposal. And that is when we'll look at the PS Minnesota report and look at all the pieces. Because you really, if you took out just one piece here and one piece there, none of the pieces would be supported by the majority very often, unless we're being really altruistic. But it's when you get all the pieces together that it makes a package that everyone can support, and so you make a really good point. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to speak because I represent four suburban school districts. And the Brooklyn Center School District is a suburban district. It's 286, and if you look at the line, they would need $858,000. That considering there is approximately 1,700 students in the school. That is a significant, in the district, that is a significant cut. The Osseo School District would lose $90 per student. So this doesn't just hit at Minneapolis and St. Paul. This hits at the suburbs as well, and I would encourage members to vote no.
Thank you, Representative Hilstrom. Representative Dominguez, and then back to Representative Garofalo. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to remind my friend, Representative Garofalo, of the time we went out to Minneapolis and we visit every league, 40 legislators of us, ourselves with the finance and the policy. And as I remember, you were one of those members that came to me and said that we really need to do something about this. And I think that after that, you and I went alone and we visited some schools and we even went to some Catholic schools. And what you came and told me was, I think we need to do something about this. So I just want to remind you that, you know, the differences between what you see in the inner schools and what you see in the rural schools is quite different. And you heard what folks had to say. There was over 350 people that came forward and talked about the school districts, especially the Minneapolis school districts and how much they're hurting. And I understand that other school districts are hurting. But I think we need to sit back and really work this out. And I really appreciate a no vote on this because I think all schools are hurting. I'm one for trying to make our school district, which is the Minneapolis School District, which serves primarily children of color. And so, I hope that members realize where we're at, and I hope that there's a no vote on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just wrap up the discussion on this amendment. And my friend, Representative Dominguez, thank you for your comments. I don't expect you or my friend, Representative Dabney, or my friend, Representative Marquardt, to support this amendment. But it is important that members look at this statute and understand what it does. In all candor, I had the opportunity to sit down with the author of this amendment when it was the author of the amendment who put this stuff in the statute, who put this formula in law. And I said, you know, I have to shake, when I met with this person, I asked him, I said, you know, I have to shake your hand. I said, I know that you must be an engineer. Because only an engineer could come up with a formula that did this. Only an engineer could accomplish this in the manner that it does. And his response to me was very honest. He said, oh, no, I didn't design the funding formula. I went to the staff and told them what I wanted. And then they drew the law. So, again, I don't expect every member to vote for this, but I would just ask you to take a look at this and look at the statutes across our nation. No one else uses a compression algorithm to increase this stuff. It's designed to extract votes from one portion of the state and send it to the other. It's not based in rational funding formulas or results. So that's my comments, and we'll let it go at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Garofalo, you'll be pleased to know that when we get around to the new proposal that we have looked at what is fair for everybody, and so hopefully you can put your mind around that and take a look at that. And I will just say before I call on Representative Heigerkin that, for the record, I'm sure it won't slow anybody down, but we all know, and in case there's anybody in this room who doesn't know, Representative Mullery, whose report you were reading out of, is in a political fight for his life and is having to crow as much as he can about what he did for his children. And so we have to take things into context. And like I said, I don't expect when we get to the floor that will slow you down one bit, but we can always tell you again when we get to it. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point that when you look at School District 2753, Mary Ellen, the Chumbas district, that the last time I looked at it, the average income in that county was lower than the state of Minnesota. You look at Lone Prairie, 40% represent Dominguez, 40% of their elementary protected students. 40%. So we have to look at compensatory too. We do have some inequities in there that need to be addressed, and we wish Representative Trimble could be on the committee to see more things to speak to it. But it's something that Representative Kraft mentioned will be.
Thank you, and you've been a part of that. Thank you very much,
Representative
Mariani.
Just very briefly, by the way, Representative Kendall's district would lose under this proposal, but, you know, I think where there's common ground here is that I think all of us can agree that, by and large, we're not doing poor kids, no matter where they live in the state, really well. As a member of the Legislative Commission on Poverty, we traveled around the state for 6 months and poked our noses in all sorts of corners. And it's pretty clear whether it's, you know, quality educational opportunities or other aspects of life that we're falling far short in this state in terms of meeting our moral and intelligent obligations to poor kids no matter where they live in this state. And I hope that as we go forward in the coming months with I think we're going to take a very courageous posture of both Democrats and Republicans, big city and small city folks, to look at how we can better distribute educational opportunity in the state, that we keep in mind all our poor kids. And Representative Apple, I welcome the opportunity to sit with you more to talk about these issues. I am convinced that concentration of poverty is a major social indicator of quality of life for individuals. That's different than I fear that cases of poverty, but I think what we can all agree on is that poverty, regardless of whether it's isolated or concentrated, is just an unacceptable social reality for our young people in Minnesota. I look forward to working with all of you to find a better way to deal with that.
Thank you, Mariani. Well said. And, you know, as a person who's all of my districts actually benefit from this change, of course I won't be supporting it. But I think why it's tempting for some is because all districts, the school districts in poverty, of course, need to be funded, but all districts actually aren't doing very well in the state of Minnesota. So that's when it always becomes tempting to take from others to get for yourself, but it really isn't right. Representative Detmer.
Imagine, this is a quick statement. Been in education for 34 years. I hope 10 years down the line we're not having the same conversation. So that's all I got to say.
All right. Hearing see no one else on the list, the clerk will take the roll.
Kylan?
No.
Angelos?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
Yes.
Gaffney?
No.
Detmer?
Yes.
Detmer?
Yes.
Teacher? Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidrichen?
Yes.
Holstrom?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McFarland? Morgan? Morrow?
No.
Olson?
Yes.
Whale?
No.
There being 8 ayes and 10 nays, the A-14 amendment is not adopted. We'll go back then. I see Representative Morrow is here. The A-13 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Madam Chair, members, this, I believe, was a also a bill at one point carried by Representative Norton. And what this bill seeks to do is say when someone is going to leave to teach in a charter school, that the district may require that the request come before February 1st in the preceding school year, or before February 1st calendar year, which is perceived as scheduled to terminate. And members, I think we've been through these discussions, and it's also been discussed in the policy bill, so I'll leave it at that for the sake of time. I think members are probably pretty familiar with this bill or amendment.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrow, is this the agreed upon language between the charter schools and you?
Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I ask you, I can't say whether this is the agreed upon language because I'm not in the policy committee. I might be able to defer to members who are in that committee.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Morrow, I know that this is not the language that was suggested to me. So I'm going to have to oppose this amendment because I was hoping, and I know the charter schools were very willing, and maybe we'll hear from them later, to make some adjustments. But Madam Chair, I'll call for a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. Rep. Morrow.
Oh, Madam Chair, I would just mention on this bill, you know, it's trying to make the notification leave consistent. There are school district planning issues that arise here, in my recollection, in my full role as a school board chair. There's also the concerns about young probationary teachers, whether they need to go out and look for new jobs while teachers are trying to decide whether or not to go to a charter school. I'm worried about that issue. I was very worried about that with our young teachers in St. Peter. And this is just, well, I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, does anyone, the member from the policy committee, Rep. Mariani, is back here now. The question came up, is this the agreed upon language with the charter schools? And we decided not to take testimony, but is there anyone in the audience that knows the answer to that? Ms. Larson? You could identify yourself, and just for this one time, since we don't know, usually we know everything.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Kate Larson, Association of Charter Schools. This is not the agreed-upon language. Our concern was a teacher that may have to give notice, and if the charter school would close during the summer, this would not make them eligible to come back. So this is not the agreed-upon language.
We will give a minute to the school board association as well, as long as we get the charter school.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider. I'm on staff of the school board association, and this is, there was no other language that was discussed at the time of the committee. They talked about these issues, but no language was brought forward to us to agree to. So the language before us is the language that we initially drafted in the bill form. And this is something that's supported by our MSBA Delegate Assembly of 340 public school districts.
Very good. Thank you both. Ms. Larson.
And Madam Chair, just for clarification, we did take this language to Representative Norton, and she was open to our new language. So if you adopt this, we can certainly work with her.
Very good. Thanks a lot. Okay. Any other discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Kramer?
Yes.
Enzals?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Gaffney?
Yes.
Demmer? Detmer? Dietrich? Dominguez?
Yes.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heidrichen?
Yes.
Hillstrom?
Yes.
Mariani?
Aye.
Marquardt?
Yes.
Ms. Farland? Morgan? Morrow?
Yes.
Olson?
No.
Wales? Yes. Between 14 ayes and 2 nays, the A13 amendment is adopted. Representative Bamley, the A30 amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair and members. Members may recall when you heard the Loeffler bill that included a number of provisions. This was one of them, the statewide health improvement program that has public health authorities working with schools and school districts on the reduction of, on activities targeted to the reduction of chronic diseases, also working particularly with students on some of the health concerns that are most prevalent amongst young people and most distracting from their academic performance. It's based on a model of that I know is done in my school district, maybe done elsewhere, based on a CDC grant. The public health department works with students in schools who, for instance, are diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. They have education kits that are available for staff, for students, and for families. Also working with students with asthma, and we all know that there's rising rates of asthma and issues of attendance often with students who are struggling with their asthma. So this works with the school, with the schools and the public health department. It is not a mandate on the schools. It is actually a funding opportunity for schools to strengthen their public health and their health activities. I'd ask for your support.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, is there a fiscal note? I know there's a base allocation of $60,000 to each community health board, but is that fiscal note found someplace?
Yes, in Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, that fiscal note is found in the health department, in the health finance committee, because this language is also there and they're carrying the cost there. Again, this is not a mandate nor a cost on the schools. It's actually an opportunity for them to receive grants to improve student health.
And Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, have you checked with the HHS committee to see if this is a part of their fiscal?
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, this language is in the health finance bill.
Madam Chair, I'll call for a roll call, please.
Roll call is requested. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Riley?
Yes.
Enzo?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Dabney?
Yes.
Demmer? Detmer? Lucas?
Yes.
Dominguez?
Yes.
Erickson?
No.
Faust?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Heidrichen?
No.
Hilstrom?
Yes.
Mariani?
Aye.
Marquardt?
Yes.
McFarland? Morgan? Morrow?
Yes.
Olson?
No.
Wales?
Yes.
There being 13 ayes and 4 nays, the A30 amendment is adopted. Representative Morrow, the A11 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is about the Special Education Task Force, and if you have the bill in front of you, the mango, which is on page 33, the language on page 33 talks about the original language asks that the task force go through and find out where state law exceeds federal law. That reference occurs again a few lines later. My experience as the chair of the special education district out of my area leads me to question whether this approach of saying where does the state exceed the federal doesn't really get to where I think we're trying to go. Rather, I'm arguing that we should ask the task force to determine where state law should be maintained by law or regulation, and also recommend which statute should be maintained. So rather than set up the state versus federal dichotomy, I'm asking the task force to tell us where state law or rule should be maintained.
Representative Morrow, I think the beginning part of your amendment makes good sense, and it's a more positive way to word it. But I'm wondering if you'd be open to striking line 1.8 and 1.9. That's the part that the Department of Education was promulgating rules having to do with the adversive and deprivation procedures by school districts with special ed students, and if we omit that language, then it isn't anywhere.
Madam Chair, I'd be open to amending my amendment by striking lines 1.8 and 1.9.
Thank you, Representative Morrow. So Representative Morrow incorporates striking lines 1.8 and 1.9. So his amendment now goes from 1.1 to 1.7. Thank you very much. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you. And if I might ask, Representative Morrow, where did this come from? Because I was the original author of the bill, and I have not had anyone come to me and ask me to make this change, and we actually have people working already. And once you start changing, the more things you change in the middle of working together, you change the dynamics of how things are working. And so I'm curious as to where this came from so that I can decide whether or not I should encourage members to vote for it or oppose.
Representative Morrow.
Absolutely. And thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hilstrom. Representative Hilstrom, this came through a series of discussions with folks from representing school boards and raising the concern of the very dichotomy I was just describing. So, from the School Boards Association.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Representative Morrow. I just want to make sure I understand this, that this says that if the task force says it's all right for the state to exceed federal statute, that we'll keep that in place. Also, if there is no federal requirements on something and we've got requirements in place, that's also okay if the task force thinks it's okay.
I'm sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Faust, it must be late in the afternoon for me. I think I understand what you're saying. I think I agree with you. What I'm trying to say here is that what the task force is going to say is look at all the state and federal, I'm sorry, the state laws and rules and tell us which ones we should keep.
We've got Representative Mariani, Representative Olson, and then back to Representative Gilstrom. Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, and a question to Representative Morrow, and I think I'm struggling perhaps with anything Representative Gilstrom, I think, was asking. I mean, the task force has already done a good chunk of this work, and so we're asking them to, they weren't able to finish. And so by changing the, you know, the criteria, of assessing value to these rules, are we running the risk of having them go all the way back to the beginning then? And that may be good, but I just want to be clear about what it is that we're asking them to do here.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, that's certainly a very valid concern, and I would be interested in hearing more. This would derail a task force. That's certainly not my goal. Rather, my concern is simply the way I read this language, it was that it would tell us where does the state exceed the federal, and that seemed to be the ending point, and I was disturbed with that ending point. I was just hoping to hear what should the state special education program consist of.
Maybe we should go back to Representative Hilstrom now, because actually it seems to me this amendment, I thought it was clarifying what Representative Hilstrom was already doing and putting it in a kind of a positive way, but it seems to me it's an amendment that isn't aware of what she already has done this year. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would actually encourage members not to support this amendment. There has been a lot of work done, and one of the task force's jobs was to identify where we exceed so that then the legislature could have the debate about whether we should be keeping or not keeping based on some recommendations and some input from both sides. And so if all we're going to be doing is saying, do they think we should keep them or do we not think, then we are taken out of the process of saying, this is what we should keep. The group agreed on these pieces. They disagreed on these pieces. And so I would encourage members to vote no.
And actually, the more I listen to this, I'm coming to that conclusion, too, because I thought it was just trying to put things in a more positive way. But I think I really wonder if the School Board Association kept track of what you did this year. Representative Olson and then Representative Faust. Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, I was just going to comment that this issue is now come over into government operations, and we had a very lengthy discussion on this very issue, and I would concur that we should not support the amendment and ask for a roll call vote.
Thank you, Representative
Olson.
Representative Morrow wants to pull his amendment.
I'm going to pull the amendment.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Garofalo, A-15. You're for you the hero, right?
Well, let's hope, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, simply put, this is a motion where you're going to have a true chance to vote in favor of local control as opposed to federal control of our schools. This is not a Republican or a Democrat issue. It's not conservative or liberal. It's really about federal or local control. I was first elected in 2004, and since then, I have always opposed No Child Left Behind. It doesn't matter whether it's President Bush or President Clinton or President Obama. The fact of the matter is we should be making decisions about our schools, local parents, local teachers, locally elected officials. Those are the ones that should be making decisions about education in our state, not bureaucrats 1,000 miles away. I will acknowledge that there are some schools in this nation that do need federal oversight, that do need federal dictates telling them what to do. I would say that's probably the case in Mississippi, some parts of Alabama, the Deep South, Arkansas, Kentucky. However, I don't think that applies to Minnesota. I think we've got a pretty strong tradition of getting it right. I don't always agree with the decisions we make, but I respect the fact that we've got some pretty awesome expertise in the state on what decisions we should be making or not making. And I would ask the members' support in favor of this amendment.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo.
Just kind of a point of information. Did you happen to notice that I had introduced a similar bill?
We saw it today.
In the hopper.
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, I did not notice it until you pointed it out to me when committee started. I'm happy to have your support on this amendment.
And Madam Chair, before I suggest I give support, I'm just wondering if the good representative has gotten a fiscal note on this, or what the impact for the state finances of public schools will be if we suddenly pull out of this largesse of the federal government in this regard.
Representative Grappolo.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I do not have a fiscal note. However, I do have a Minnesota Department of Finance report regarding No Child Left Behind that states that the Department of Education estimates that No Child Left Behind funding will be $219 million for state fiscal year 08. However, I would tell the Chair and Representative Benson that there have been reports that have shown the costs of implementing this program are actually greater than the reimbursements we receive from the federal government.
And we actually haven't noticed too many, if any, states being sanctioned by the federal government, even though they always threaten to do that. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, this is actually a rather tempting amendment. Of course, many years ago, I had an opportunity on the House floor to put this specifically.
And I haven't forgotten.
I'm still paying Representative Grayling back for that. One of the major redeeming characteristics of the NCLB was the introduction of disaggregated data reporting for subgroups of students, and particularly my interest was for students of color in a state where we are still very much a state where communities of color are a small percentage of the population relative to other states. It was pretty easy to hide, what was happening or not happening with these students in our schools, because we do a really good job overall in terms of racial ethnic subgroups of educating white students, far better than we do students of color, and that was hidden. And if nothing else, NCLB put on the table the much more transparency on this issue. Having said all that, the devil's in the details, and there's a lot of devilish details that we have struggled with on both sides of the aisle and in all sorts of committees. Not the local control issue for sure, but also a number of other issues related to how we can best measure the performance of our schools and our students. And I think we started off generally wanting to do the right thing, and somehow we've kind of turned a bunch of corners, and it's highly questionable whether or not we're doing damage with those details to what happens or should be happening in our schools. And frankly, it's part of that concern that, created our motivation to push on the Representative Reinert and Senator Rummel's report card legislation, which at least allows us not a replacement, but at least a parallel way of measuring lesser accountability, but certainly of measuring what happens and doesn't happen in our schools beyond just a static point in time standardized test measurement. So I'm awfully tempted, Secretary Garofalo, and I think you're absolutely correct when you say this is not a Republican or Democrat issue. I think we, as the rest of the country, are really struggling with the many unintended consequences of our federal mandate, and I certainly hope that the Department of Education is listening very carefully to this debate, because this isn't just a liberal-democrat debate or a conservative Republican debate. This is a real genuine concern about what we may be doing by complying with federal mandates to our schools. And my hope is that we'll be able to morph NCLB in time into something that's much more better of telling what actually happens in education so that we can actually help our schools to be better as opposed to just simply punishing them for a point in time static measurement. But yeah, it's a very tempting amendment for example.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Rothwell, I carried this in the past, and at the time I carried it, I was not aware of any other states that had taken such action. At this time, do you know if there's any other states, Representative Garofalo, that have taken action with the proposal?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, the state of Utah has passed language, a resolution.
Yes.
Regarding the No Child Left Behind, as to, you know, whether it is a full opt-out. I will tell you that there was broad bipartisan consensus in the state of Utah. As the specific answer to your question, I can tell you other states have taken action regarding whether anyone's fully opting out. I can't answer that, Representative Olson.
That's it, Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo. The, well, given that we've all acknowledged that we're leaders in the country in education, I would urge members to support this amendment, and let's lead.
Thank you very much. Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair, I want a roll call on this, but I also want to remind everyone that we have spent hundreds of millions of dollars since we had outcome-based education, moved to the profile of learning, and now this. So we have... I think we need to take responsibility for having spent tons of money from our taxpayers to probably accomplish not what we thought we should accomplish.
Thank you very much, Representative Beatrice.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, would just like to weigh in on this a little bit. I agree with Representative Mariani. This is so tempting just to say, let's drop it. But Representative Erickson's comments are very well taken. And that is, if we are, we have, as she mentioned, went from outcome-based education to profile learning, now to No Child Left Behind. And within the education community, if we pull out now, so abruptly, without the proper conversations within our communities, it would just be one more failed program. And I know that within the schools, the teachers and administrators already feel like we keep pulling them down these different paths, and we have these, and then the minute they start getting the infrastructure and the structure behind us, then all of a sudden we pull the rug out and say, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to take you down a different direction. I wish what this did was it brought some of the modifications that are needed for No Child Left Behind instead of just a total pullout. Because the total pullout leaves us in a financial a worse financial situation than we are in now. And so I guess that is the second reading reason. The other is the third reason that I guess I can't support this in this form the way that it sits right now. Is we've talked about Minnesota being number one in public education, and according to the ACT test, we are. But we do have an achievement gap in this state. And we are number one in that because we are the first in the nation. We have the widest achievement gap in the nation. And I myself, as an educational leader, or a leader in any realm, I don't know how to address a problem without, first of all, identifying it. And I think Representative Mariani made a very profound statement. At least this has a very profound statement. At least this has drawn the attention to a problem. And so it is so tempting just to say, let's bag it. And either way, it's not going to be, you know, whoever you're making happy or frustrated by this vote. It's not going to be unanimous, that's for sure. It's going to cause some hard feelings somewhere. But I just right now just don't feel like this is the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Well, my heart says yes on this amendment, but my mind says no on it. You know, the cat's out of the bag, and it was a very heavy-handed federal approach. You know, I don't think Minnesota was ever brought to the table, and yet we rank on the top on almost everything as far as education. It'd be like holding a pitching seminar and not having Johan Santana come and show people how to pitch. But right now, a lot of the things that are happening in this, we should be doing anyway, looking at adequate yearly progress, looking at closing the achievement gap, looking at putting into different categories so we know everyone and not just an aggregate, but everyone is doing that. And these are things that we should be doing anyway, and I think would lead to, and I think is pushing us towards better standards. And if we opt out, we still need to do these things, but without the $200 million that the state's providing. So you're doing more with less. So it is tempting, as everyone has said, but in reality, I think this is something the public wants. I know there's a lot of complaints about the testing, but the public does want accountability. They want to see our achievement go up, and they want that gap to close. And so, like I said, it'd be nice to just say, but we can't. In all reality, we have to stick with it. And I'm hoping the Department of Education, like Representative Mariani says, is listening closely to this. And they've made a number of changes, and they've talked to the feds about this, and I know they're working hard on trying to make some of this work, so I hope they continue on that.
Madam Chair and Committee, at the request of the author, I'll remove the roll call.
To remove the roll call. Any further discussion? Mr. Van Zyl.
Well, quite frankly, Representative Garofalo, I'm shocked that there isn't more agreement in support of your amendment. It's shocking to me, seriously. I've had conversations with all of you and hundreds of school people over the last 2 years, and do something with No Child Left Behind. And now we have an opportunity, and people are taking this out into the wilderness. You know, on the Iron Range, in the old days when they were digging for ore, and the old timers were there and they were digging shift after shift, and couldn't find any ore, the real old timer would come and say, "Stop digging." That's kind of the way I feel with it. We can stop digging the hole and try to reconfigure our meager resources and use them in a more beneficial way. So I'm supporting this.
Thank you, Representative Anzell. I am too. We have three more speakers. We have two more amendments after this, and I think people like to talk about these things. I have been sort of saying I was for mending it, not ending it, but I don't see Congress doing any mending. That's the problem. And so that's why I evolved once again into being into an ended person. If they would have amended it, and you know, the best parts of it, of course, are what others have talked about, the disaggregating of data and the duty to do something about it, and that's been very, very good, but the rest of it isn't worth it, in my opinion. We have Representative Faust, Swales, Benson, and Hillstrom, and then Representative Garofalo wants to talk again.
I'll just ask that I'd be able just to wrap things up.
You will.
So whenever
we're not going to let you talk in between all these.
No, I won't. I won't. I just want to make sure we wrap up.
Okay, we're going to stick with this then. Faust, Wells, Benson, Hillstrom, Garofalo, and then we'll vote. Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When Representative Anzell said that the people in education told him to do something with it, the people in education that I've talked to had much more descriptive words than do something with it. And so there's a lot of concern about, you know, what are we going to do if we drop this? Well, the people I've talked to have said that, you know, nothing is better than this. And so, you know, let's punt and figure it out from here. At least if we get rid of this, we can move forward instead of continuing to move backwards. So I think that this is a good amendment, and I appreciate Representative Graffel for bringing that forward.
Representative Quayle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a very croaky voice right now, but I agree with Representative Garofalo. And I am entrenched in the classroom. I oversee these tests in my classroom. We have a nickname for No Child Left Behind, and it's No Child Left Untested. It really does go to that. Like the profile in learning, even though it was a cumbersome and problematic piece of legislation and we spent tens of millions of dollars on it, I believe that any teacher worth his or her salt learned something from profiles of learning. I certainly learned better teaching techniques and became a better deliverer of curriculum to my students. The same is true of this. And I think Minnesota is a very smart state. I think we have perfected in a lot of ways the MCAs, the MCA2s, MAP tests. I think that we now know which ones are the most valuable and which ones we could throw overboard. And I think that it would be very refreshing to be able to say to the educators of our state that we trust you, we have a vision for how we can improve education in Minnesota, and they're saying it. So I will support you, Representative Garofalo, on this.
Thank you, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a couple of quick questions. One of them was for fiscal staff. There's a discussion about whether or not the funds we're getting from the federal government is sufficient to carry out the program as it is here in Minnesota. And I'm just wondering if they might have any numbers indicating that issue. It's been my understanding that the state of Minnesota, in fact, has had to subsidize this activity on the because the federal government has reneged in its promises to fully fund the program. So that's the first question, but I see they're nodding no.
So then, nodding no, that's a good one.
So, Madam Chair, I had a second question, kind of piggybacking up on your comments. I noticed with interest that the Secretary of Education came to Minnesota and was talking about this whole topic. And then I found a discussion in media that in fact Minnesota does not qualify for any waivers, but that apparently other states have. And I'm just wondering if Representative Garofalo had interceded for us with the Secretary of Education when she was here so conveniently to listen to his complaint.
Representative Benson, I was at the meeting and so was he. Representative Garofalo.
He was Senator Hahn at the meeting, though.
Yeah, that's right. He was Senator Hahn. So he had to. No, he didn't have to behave himself, did he?
I tried to say it, Madam Chair, but. I'll wrap up with this because I want to be respectful of everyone's time. First of all, Representative Dietrich, if it feels good, do it. You should vote for this.
I'll tell my teenagers that.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for honoring my request to rescind the roll call. I really do appreciate that deference that you showed me on this. Madam Chair, members, people have brought up some good, positive points about some of the good things that have happened from No Child Left Behind.
Representative Garofalo, this is not your wrap-up.
Oh, it's not?
Answer him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Afterwards.
Okay, well, I will stop talking then.
Representative Benson, are you done?
I am finished.
Representative Hilstrom. Thank you, Madam Chair. My basic question is, you know, I have been for eliminating the profile of learning first, then No Child Left Behind. So, but my real question is, you know, the federal government puts in these rules and says you don't get the money if you don't comply. What happens to our school's finances if we opt out of this? Because I am a realist, and at the end of the day, we either have the money to fund education or we don't. And I'm not going to vote for something just because I want to send a message that I don't like the program and then end up hurting my school because of the loss of dollars. So, one, does this affect our budget here? And do we know how much money we lose in the event we really do opt out? Well, we can turn to the staff to find out about that. But as I said earlier, there really haven't been any states that I'm aware of that have actually ever been sanctioned because they didn't do what the federal government wanted them to do. And I think Representative Garofalo cited the amount of money.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Hillstrom, according to the Department of Finance report from January this year, the estimate Motel Left Behind funding is $219.7 million in state fiscal year 2008. But just to 2 points on your concerns about this, and this is not my wrap-up yet, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Number one is that it's been documented the cost of this program exceed the revenues we get. So the reductions in unfunded mandates to the state, to the school districts, are in effect new revenue to the school district.
Right.
The second point I would make, and I walk out onto this landmine very, very cautiously, is if there are people like me who would be open to the argument, if it's made, I think it's a false choice, but if the argument is that I have to pay more for educational liberty and educational freedom, that's the conversation I'm willing to have.
Can staff confirm that in fact it does?
They did confirm that. I said and what he said is all they would pay to.
Madam Chair and Representative Hilton, the only source of information we have, or the best source of information we have, is the report the Representative Garofalo cited, and we can only, as Representative Greiling said, we can only speculate as to whether that we would actually be sanctioned if we did this, and I can't speculate on that.
Are we spending more money implementing the program than we are receiving?
I don't know that. Madam Chair, Representative Hilton, I don't know that report has indicated what districts are spending. Lisa, do you want to talk?
Do you want to say something? No. Okay, we have Representative Olson, then we're going to go back to Representative Garofalo, and then we're going to vote. We're going to move on because people are starting to want to talk again and again. And so, Representative Olson, please don't ask Representative Garofalo any questions. Because he only gets his wrap-up. Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, that's what I was going to do.
Well, then ask your question, and then it's on to him and off to you.
Well, Madam Chair, let me start with a question for you.
Okay.
As you know, I was bothering you a little while ago in the other room because I had a misunderstanding with Ms. Larson, our counsel to the committee, about an amendment request. I had requested a number of amendments, and I wanted them by the time we did this bill, because I was going to do that and introduce bills for those amendments. Not that I didn't think the bill amendments would pass, but you know how it is.
We like to get our points across.
Right. So there was a misunderstanding, and my amendments were not submitted to the committee, but I did make the deadline. I requested it last week. One of the amendments has to do with this issue. In checking with Ms. Larson, I found a concern with this amendment, and I believe it doesn't do what I thought it did. And I just want to raise this question, whether it be for counsel or for Representative Garofalo, maybe I assume he knows, but this amendment of Representative Garofalo's does not repeal statutory requirements in Chapter 120B related to implementing the No Child Left Behind Act.
Oh.
And it's my understanding of the amendment, therefore, that we'd still be going forward with a lot of different provisions in law and still have to implement them. Is that correct?
And Representative Olson, maybe we should ask Ms. Larson that question. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, my opinion is that you are correct, that in Chapter 120B, we have many, many provisions related to assessment, standards, testing, that are premised on how No Child Left Behind operates. Because they are in state law, if federal law were to go away tomorrow, were not declared unconstitutional or something like that, so that there would be no conflict between state and federal law, the state law would remain in effect until change.
Madam Chair, I was going to, after this amendment hopefully was adopted, I was going to move part of my amendment to it, and I'll just very briefly state what my amendment says. Is that the department is to immediately petition the federal government, Federal Department of Education, to use the federal funds it receives for No Child Left Behind
as it determines appropriate and consistent with the state assessment. If that is not, if that petition is not accepted in the affirmative, then we go forward to move out and withdraw from No Child Left Behind. And I felt that that was a good approach to make the case and tell the department to go ahead and make the appeal and put in law that we want out, to give them some backbone and some backing from the state legislature so that the federal government sees that we're very serious and we're going to look at this. And I even have an attorney general provision that I've not yet drafted that the attorney general
will see. Okay, well, since you didn't get it in, let's ask for some Grappolo if he's interested in that amendment, in which case we could lay this over and take the last two amendments and the two of you could work together. If he's not, then I think we better press on. Representative Grappolo.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, short answer, no.
All right, Representative Grappolo, closing statement. Yeah.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the discussion we've had. I appreciate it. Again, I mentioned before, there's been some good ideas brought up about why this program works, why it's had some good situations. I would say that we are smart enough to run our own schools, and that whatever ideas the federal government has, no matter how good those ideas are, we don't really need the federal government telling us what to do. And for those of you who are banking on the promise that perhaps a new administration or new people in Washington are going to fully fund No Child Left Behind, I would just point you to this over 30 years of inaction in special education funding to show you that this is what's coming. This promise is never going to be met. It's never going to happen. Our best bet is to opt out of this and get out of this. And Madam Chair, members, I'd ask for your support.
Thank you very much. No roll call has been requested, so all in favor of the A15 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
The amendment is adopted.
Division.
Division has been called for. Those who are in favor of the A15 amendment, raise your hand. All opposed.
Chair, I've got a point here.
All right. What was the vote?
12 ayes.
12 ayes and however many nays. Okay. The amendment is adopted. The chair does have excellent ears. Representative Morrow, A12.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is another perennial issue. It's about the start date for schools. This is a limited amendment. This deals with the 09-2010 school year and the 10-11 school year. Members in 2010, Labor Day falls on September 6th. Falls on September 5th in the year 2011, and this is just to allow schools to choose if they wish to start before Labor Day in those 2 years.
Discussion on Representative Morrow's A12 amendment. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and again, I speak against the amendment. I think that we allow what we need to be looking at more than anything is we need to be looking at the length of the 2 days. That's what a waste of time is. We have school districts of 336 minutes, school districts of 480. That is the issue. And I think I also allude to a school district of my legislative district, Denton, that added 16 minutes to the day, and they added 6 days because of that. And I think we need to be looking at that. But again, to be messing around with the calendar, I speak against it.
Mr. Van Zyl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Please vote for all those resorts from Forest Lake to Manitoba. Vote no.
Mr. Savney.
Madam Chair, I urge a yes vote on the Morrow Amendment. Yes, we've heard, had a lot of rhetoric today about local control. This is about local control. If districts wish to start after Labor Day, they may still start after Labor Day if that fits the local conditions. Those who wish, given the late Labor Days in the next few years, may start earlier. It allows the school districts to make the choices, and I think they should be in the driver's seat on calendar issues. So I agree with the yes vote.
Representative Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I support the amendment. I just want to note for members, we actually did this once, at least once before, on a similar situation where Labor Day fell awfully late. And so the president has been set, and it didn't, create, a long-standing change, although that we should debate that. But the president has been set, and the sky didn't fall when we did that before. I think it's a wise thing to do.
Thank you very much, and I also support it. Definitely, people, this is a geographical vote, not a party vote. Representative McFarland.
I'm in support of this also because I think it should be local control.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like this amendment because it really doesn't put a mandate because it says May start. And I am going to support this.
All right. No further discussion. All in favor of the A-12 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried and out.
They
should
have called.
We actually do have to count. So we really do have to count. And Shannon has gone off to check on Representative Olson's question and get out that email. So we need to have you raise your hands if you're for it very high and leave them up till Ms. Mandelman gets them. Wait a minute.
Where's the camera?
Iron Range Alzheimer's. Forget everything but the grudges.
Mr. Mandel, you had me convinced to vote the other way. Okay, and then those opposed, raise your hand. The D4 amendment, I believe, is Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE4 amendment.
Representative Erickson moves the DE4 amendment. Representative Erickson.
And Madam Chair, I have two oral amendments, both on page 26.
On page 26. Representative Andy.
Madam Chair.
Representative Olson is going to tell us her oral amendment on page 26.
And I took my copy out with my pen.
Good, you're ready. Listening while talking. Representative Erickson.
Oh, Madam Chair, I don't need to offer those. I guess I have my original here, and they
so
were these, correct.
They're already in this.
Yes, so the numbers have been changed.
Okay,
so.
Representative Erickson, if you want
Thanks,
to tell
Madam
us about
Chair,
your
committee,
amendment.
This is, of course, going to make us unhappy in that I am taking... changing the concentration factor to do this funding. But what I have found, members, and not to elaborate greater than Representative Garofalo did some minutes ago, is the lack of accountability for the use of the concentration factor. I have not yet received reports to find out how districts are using compensatory or to what extent they're using the concentration factor, but let me just review for members and you, Madam Chair, what's in the bill. This is funding some of the governor's proposals, including, as you see in Article 1, the virtual education program, and then the Minnesota Teach program and the UTeach program. Those are both fully funded at $250,000. My amendment replaces the Brainerd report card language with the language preferred by the department and by the governor. It includes the peer review for teachers that the governor proposed also. It includes structural balance. It stipulates that all one-time money must not be spent on ongoing expenses. And it clarifies the process of a referendum renewal so that the language that was in the original bill, it clearly states that it's the amount per pupil that that it remains unchanged. And it's on page 28. By voting yes on this ballot question, you are renewing an existing property tax referendum amount per pupil. You are not changing your operating referendum from its level in the previous year. So it's the per pupil language. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions. I would like a roll call.
A roll call has been requested, and are there questions for Representative Erickson? It sounds like this is a lot of amendments that we've had already kind of put into. Is it kind of a minority report, Representative?
Madam Chair, yes, it is. My version of the minority report.
Okay.
Thank you.
So it's coming from you, not from the caucus, then?
Well, from, I'd say, a majority of us.
Okay, that's kind of how it goes. All right, Representative Mariani.
I can come up with something.
I'm looking at my list.
I think it's all being read.
Okay. It's not Representative Garofalo, but this is
Representative Garofalo.
Give me
Garofalo. Is there anybody that nobody's on the list, I guess?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just go. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Styling?
No.
Enzal?
No.
Benson?
No.
Brown?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Demmer? Detmer?
Yes.
Dietrich?
No.
Dominguez?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Faust?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Heidrichen?
No.
Holstrom? Mariani?
No, I think he's speaking.
Markford?
No.
McFarlane? Morgan?
No.
Morrow? Olson?
Yeah.
Wales?
There are 3 ayes and 14 nays. The D4 amendment is not a godsend. Now, is there anybody from the audience that wishes to testify on the bill as amended? Please identify yourself for the hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alslager, Education Minnesota, and I know that you've gone through a lot of work to put a bill together when there is very little money to be found, and the first thing I think that we should think about is the kids in Minnesota, and I thank you for the money that you are putting in the bill, but, you know, if I just have to ask, you know, if we had a business that were cutting as many staff as this state is going to cut in school employees, what would the governor and what would others be saying about that? And it, when our kids are our most valuable resources, I think that we should do the most possible to help them. And I do have to go on record as strongly opposing the student survey that is in the language. We did attempt to work with the author and thought that maybe the amendment that was performed was compromised, but ultimately, we would like to have that student survey deleted from the bill. And I will say that I guess I testified it in a lighthearted manner before the committee about the survey before. But seriously, I don't know if people understand the unintended consequences that could come as a result of it. You know, people don't like test scores actually being reported, but at least test scores are actual numbers. Those are factual things that you can say. But student surveys about relationships of students with other students and students with teachers and students with administrators are clearly subjective. And what are we doing with that information? It's being put on a report card. As I look at the language, I really don't see a lot of definition as to how that language is going to be used, what actual questions are going to be put on the test, the survey. We've seen 2 prototypes. I certainly think that there are problems with both of those prototypes. I think it could go into the parent or the home. It does go into 2 prototypes that we did see. One of them does go into the home. But, you know, I surveyed my kids all the time as a teacher. I surveyed my first graders when I had first graders, second graders, my third graders, my fourth graders. And I would say to my kids, I am asking very tough questions. I want you to tell me all the things that are good about me, and I want you to tell me all the things that are bad about me. And it's going to be my data, and I am going to learn from it. because I want to be a better teacher for you. And why were the kids honest with me and told me I was a fabulous teacher? why were they honest with me? Because they knew that I was being very serious about this. That there wasn't anybody that was going to be out there to get me and to share it with somebody else. When you put this information out into a report card, I think you want to think about the consequences that could result. Think about the declining enrollment issue and people working from school building to school building or from district to district. Think about charter schools using this information. Think about private schools using this information. Think about, there could be some positives. I'm not denying that there could be some positives, but there could also be some misuse with the media. And when a school district isn't able to pass a levy referendum and they have 40 kids in a classroom, how do you think that their results are going to compare to the district that is able to pass multiple referendums and maybe has a foundation and they have 17 kids in their classroom? I just don't think it is fair. And Education Minnesota strongly opposes it. We encourage you to take out the entire section. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. First of all, I just really want to thank.
Did you also identify yourself?
I did. Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Karen Ephraim with EdWatch. I just, first of all, really, really, really want to thank you for the vote on the No Child Left Behind Amendment, all of you. And to those of you that voted against it, I want to say that your concern for the costs and the money and the achievement gap are all really important. But I just want to say to you, especially Representative Mariani, about the achievement gap, that this method will make it worse. It will create a Robin Hood effect because the incentive is to close the achievement gap. It will actually create an incentive to ignore and take away resources from middle and high achieving kids and effect to dumb everything down. And I know that that is not the intent of anyone in this legislature. So, and for the concerns about funding, I really think there needs to be a better idea about funding and what we have spent on all of these, trying to comply with all of these mandates. I know, and this isn't official, and I couldn't give you a quote, but senators that I spoke to said that it was reported to them that if we lost all of that $219 million, that we would still come out about $10 million ahead because of what it costs. And then the other thing I wanted to say is about the report card language. I know that that was a big effort, and I appreciate the effort, but I want to remind you that regardless of that, how that part comes out and how the ultimate language on withdrawing from No Child Left Behind comes out, whether it's the Reiner-Rummel language or the department language on a report card, it's all still to find a way to dance to the federal tune. And Minnesota has always led not only in academic achievement, but it has also led in independence. And Minnesota had the highest percentage in its congressional delegation that voted against No Child Left Behind of any state in the country.
7 out of 8.
8 out of 10, actually, if you count the Senate.
Oh, counting the Senate, yeah.
And
forget about the Senate.
I really want to commend you on that. And because you have done this very good thing, it actually makes all of the bureaucracy and all of the hoops, even though it's trying to change the hoops with the report card language, unnecessary. And this is also historic day because we really strongly agree with Education Minnesota about the survey. That is very subjective. It is unnecessary, and also because schools and administrators and teachers are the ones being commented on, even though it will be reported as aggregate data, it is collected as individual data, and there is still quite a strong possibility that children will have the perceived or actual idea that what they say will be monitored, and it's a perceived or real chance of potential retribution, and I don't think that's what we want to do. So thank you for hearing my concerns, and regardless of what happens, please take out all of the language regarding the student survey.
Thank you very much, and you make a really good point that always around this place you can never burn any bridges because you never know who your allies are. Mr.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'll be quick and welcome everybody back from, I hope, a good Easter break and the extra time away. Jim Bartholomew with the Business Partnership, and also congratulations, Madam Chair and committee, on completing at this stage your bill. Want to just mention a couple of the good things and then a couple concerns, and we were happy to see that you were able to provide some funding for the Principals Leadership Academy. Developing the leadership capacity of our principals and school leaders is an important function on a statewide basis. And on the Labor Day start, frankly, we supported just an outright repeal of that state mandate, but at least you'll help some schools for now. Three concerns, and I'll do the quick, easy ones first. You've heard me testify about the growth formula that's in the bill from Representative Reinhart's proposal, and we would encourage you not to go that route. There are many ways to measure growth, and measuring against the statewide average doesn't seem very adequate when we can and should try to measure student growth with respect to our grade level expectations. We'd also hope between now and the end of session we can find a way to not cap district participation in QCOMP. Again, it's a very valuable program that helps us move towards a system a little bit more dynamic in compensation, but equally important in terms of staff development opportunities and mentors. QCOMP really is a wonderful opportunity, and we should take advantage of it, and hopefully, again, at the end of the day, we won't need to cap district participation. And then I guess maybe I'll be a bit of a sacrificial lamb in the sense that everybody's happy about the NCLB opt-out, but I guess I'll prove that it is a nonpartisan issue in the sense that we hope you will reconsider that decision and not opt out of No Child Left Behind. We totally recognize that No Child Left Behind needs a number of fixes from the federal perspective. And I won't go into a lot of the details in the sense that the feds tell us we need standards, we develop the standards. The feds tell us we need aligned assessments to those standards, we develop the assessments that are aligned to our standards. The feds tell us we need to have certain expectations in student achievement, we set those expectations. So yes, it is to a degree a federal mandate in the sense that we have to do some things, but in the general sense, we decide how we do the things. And it's
somewhat ironic that the federal government has given somebody money for a long time, didn't see any results for it, and now they are starting to ask results for the funding that they provided, and they're being criticized for that. I as an organization that worked prior to No Child Left Behind to try and set some set of accountability expectations, in particular working with the achievement gap, we weren't very successful with that. And so as we think about leaving No Child Left Behind, maybe if we had something to replace it, that would be more appropriate. And just on the light side earlier today, you guys were joking about fiscal notes. And if an agency likes the initiative, you get no to low cost. If an agency doesn't like it, you get a huge cost. I'd ask you to keep that sentiment in mind when you talk about No Child Left Behind as well. Thank you.
Identify yourself.
Good evening. Thank you, Chair Graham and committee members. My name is Stacia Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber is the largest business advocacy organization in the state, representing over 2,700 members. And I want to thank you for the time and effort you've put into this bill, first and foremost. I'm going to skip all the good stuff and go right to the concerns. Just to make it brief, two things that we oppose. The first is taking Q Comp dollars. We have been a long-time advocate for the Q Comp program. We think it's a great way to reform teacher compensation and keep the best teachers. This bill would take a quarter of the money. One-fourth of the total amount is a lot, and would mean that it would put a complete freeze on any other districts joining this year and next. Even though it's one-time money, this has been a very popular, innovative, and successful program, and we think that it should really continue. The second concern is with the growth model, and I haven't testified on this in this committee in the past. However, I have testified on other committees. The reason I didn't was because I was my understanding that Representative Reinhart was working with the department in order to work out some of the concerns, and it's my understanding that those concerns have not been worked out. We shared the same concerns that Mr. Bartholomew and Commissioner Siglin have brought up in the past, where this growth model looks at the state norm rather than really comparing it to the actual state standards. There are models out there that are very focused on the standards, and we would like to see a model like that. So the Chamber does not oppose growth models in general. And second, the growth model calls for consistency with a mysterious document called the Educational Report Card Growth Model, which has yet to exist or be seen by anybody, so we're not quite sure what exactly it means, and just think there's a lot of fleshing out yet for it to be in an omnibus bill. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee Member Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I also will be quite brief. I want to start out by thanking you, Madam Chair, and committee members. I know many of you really went to the wall to try to, you know, get a target, and when many of the other committees actually are cutting. And so we do appreciate that. But we have to all remember that that is against the backdrop of some major cuts that are going to go forward in our school districts next fall. And you've all heard this before, but I just need to go on the record again. The 36 districts in the metro area that we surveyed are looking next fall at $75 million in cumulative budget shortfall. Now, this bill will put a small dent in that, but no one should go home under any illusion that we are going to solve the budget problems for our school districts by passing this bill. And so while we thank you for your efforts, we need to keep charging. We need to try to find some more money if possible. By all means, we need to hang on to what you have in this House bill at a very minimum. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I think you'll find a lot of agreement that it's a small dent from those of us here. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Schools for Equity and Education. I would like to echo Ms. Kroonquist's remarks and really commend all of you for your creativity and your strength and your energy in moving forward and getting this target. I know that next year we'll come back and say, you know, it was one-time money, or is it in the base, and all those kinds of things. We'll have that tug-of-war, we'll have it next year, and we're all mature enough to know that that's going to happen regardless of what happens here. But we're, again, gratified that you've worked as hard as you've worked. I would also say thank you for the ballot language. I know that Ms. Kroonquist also concurs with me on that, that the, going out to a panel in Melrose with Representative Heidgerken talking about how important that language is throughout the state to clarify that there won't be tax increases as a result of those ballot questions in many instances. And I think that that clarification is going to be very, very helpful. So again, as we move forward, echoing Mr. Kroonquist's remarks and looking forward to our hearing on PS Minnesota down the road, this is a start. It's an important, it's a big dent, but we're kind of rolling it out a little bit at a time. The car can move forward, and I just want to thank you all for your hard work.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Please identify yourself.
Mary Sicconi, Parents United. Thank you. Absolutely, thank you. It's really a clean bill. And just so that you know, parents are very aware that this is a stopgap measure and that you're doing this and how difficult it's been. They're aware of it, but we really have to make sure that we do some comprehensive reform. So thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? See no one else? Then I will leave. Oh,
if I may, I will be very brief.
Yes.
Two things, very quickly. One is that I would invite any member to come and talk with me and Representative Breitert about the report card provision. It's interesting, members, that in testimony here today was criticized for doing two different things. One, because it was too tied to the standards, and then on the other hand, because it's not tied to the standards at all. It's a complicated issue. We have not spent, unfortunately, as much time in this legislature talking about the report card as we have in the last year and a half. And so I think all of us need to be brought up to speed. But I would welcome an opportunity to discuss with members what our intentions are here. And they are absolutely, definitely about helping us tell the story about how we can move toward proficiency and above proficiency relative to our standards. That is the goal of those who propose that provision, and I think we have common ground there. And then finally, Madam Chair, I just want to thank you for your leadership. Members, I don't know how many of you know just how much Representative Grayling has gone to the mat in order to get us a bill that puts 1% back additional on the formula here. It is what our schools absolutely bottom line need this year. And I honestly don't believe it would have happened without Representative Grayling. Obviously all of us, but without Representative Grayling really just pulling out all the stops to make that happen in a very, very difficult budget year. And I wish you Godspeed with this bill as you move forward with it into the next finance division and beyond.
Thank you very much, Representative Mariani. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very briefly, I understand that I'm willing to accept my amendment. I would like to ask that it be handed out. I do not wish to broadside any money. I generally rarely, if ever, have done that. I maybe you will accept the amendment, but I got word that you announced that if we got our request to council or staff, that was sufficient. I'm sorry that that is not acceptable, but I'll save it for the floor. We need to have that discussion there anyway.
Thank you, Representative Olson. I think the floor would be very appropriate. And sorry about that misunderstanding. When I said the staff, I meant this staff, because then we go through the amendments and get them all in order. And the research staff is not the staff we're talking about when we need to get it to us. I do know that you got an email from your caucus saying get it to
research. No, he doesn't have his own caucus.
Oh, that's right.
Well,
your members all got Representative Erickson, your members all got theirs in. So that's the confusion. You don't have a caucus. And so the floor will be fine. The floor will be fine. Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, that is not the confusion at all. I had the earliest request ever to Ms. Larson for my amendment, and that created confusion because as my own caucus, I'm so much more proficient. The request went in so early, it wasn't clear that I meant it for this bill on the
talk. Sometimes being too early makes it harder. On the floor will be fine. And there was some confusion with quite a few members and groups that are here in the audience actually had amendments for people. When we say we want amendments in at a certain time, we mean the two staff to my left, not the research staff. And there were quite a few amendments that ran into problems like that, but luckily discovered sooner than Representative Olson. So we need to do better on getting ourselves all informed about that. But anyway, thank you all for working on this. We're not going to say goodbye because we have, in a couple of weeks, the Education Finance Reform Task Force. And I think all the words from the testifiers will be good fuel for our fire for that effort, because we all know that this is, you know, treading water, holding ourselves as high as we can in a year when everybody else got cut. But we have to do a lot better and have a lot more courage in the coming biennium, and that will be the start of that. Okay, I'll renew my motion that House File 2475 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is now recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to Education Finance. Thank you all very much. See you in a couple of weeks. The meeting is adjourned.